There was an idea.
Stark knows this.
Called the Avengers Initiative. The idea was to bring together a group of remarkable people. See if they could become something more. See if they could work together when we needed them to fight the battles that we never could. Phil Coulson died still believing in that idea. In heroes.
Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, we're going to be discussing 10 years of movie magic, culminating in one of the largest film franchises in history, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, or the MCU, if you're one of those people on the internets that refuses to use the entire term. And after that discussion, we're going to break down our thoughts on the culmination of those 10 years with our Avengers Infinity War spoiler cast. Do not worry, you'll be fully warned before any spoilers are spoken. It won't happen until about an hour in, so I promise, you're safe for right now. You're safe. Now, let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow host, Johnny Davenport.
So, is it not fair to tell him that Superman raffle stomps everyone at the end?
He did win. I was really surprised by that. I was really shocked. Superman came in out of nowhere because, I mean, DC needs that money, so they're willing to partner with Marvel now.
Whatever. Why not?
Joining us this week is Scott Calgaro, also known as Scotch to affectionate fans.
What up, fellow hoes?
Hey, you know, we can actually just call you Scott for most of this show.
I was going to say you don't need to do the Scotch thing now because the lesser Scott has left.
Who?
Wow. By the way, John Scott's leaving.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Well, actually.
But you're right here.
Actually, he'll show up later in this episode.
Oh, that's true. He is coming back.
Keep an ear out and you'll hear Mr. Scott Clark. All right. Well, let's get into this. This week is a bit unique as we're going to just dive right in. We have a topic and then a spoiler cast, but they are connected. Even still, be assured we will not speak any spoilers for Infinity War until later in the show, so you are safe. I know everybody's worried about that. Ease back. Calm yourself. You guys ready to get into this? Of course you are.
Yeah, here. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, this month marks 10 years of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. 19 movies that began with Iron Man, which led to The Incredible Hulk, Thor, Captain America, Guardians of the Galaxy, Ant-Man, Black Panther, and a reemerging Spider-Man. That doesn't even include all the side heroes like Black Widow, Falcon, War Machine, The Wasp, and of course, Agent Coulson and Peggy Carter. So this week, before we jump into the culmination of those 10 years of Marvel films, we're going to look back at the cinematic universe and what building it has meant to us as fans. I do want to say before we get going, did you guys think 10 years ago when this whole thing started that we would actually be here and that this wouldn't just fall apart midway somewhere?
No. I didn't think that this was going to work, actually, because they picked the lesser-known superheroes. Mm. Like Superman and Wonder Woman and all the Justice League characters, the DC Universe, at least when I was a kid, those were the better-known superheroes. Iron Man, Thor. I read those comics, but a lot of people didn't. They weren't like the well-known heroes that you would expect to see. When I saw they were doing an Iron Man movie, I was like, really? That's the one that they picked? Iron Man? The one that like nobody read? And it turned out to be a brilliant choice. So, yay Marvel.
What about you, Jeff? Yay Marvel! That's what everybody says now. Yay Marvel!
Yeah, I had no idea that it would last as long as it did. And I think in the 25 years that this show has been going on, I think I've heard everyone say at least once a year that that's coming from the point of view of a fan, that this is the year comic book movies die, but yet Marvel seems to keep going. And yeah, no idea that it would last this long or it would do what it did and create a whole movement of movies that are all connected like this. It's really great of them.
And are you saying the Hollywood Outsider has been on for 25 years? Because that would make me super old, jackass.
Yeah.
I think that was the point.
I don't think he understands how maths work. That's what I think. What I found is that I 100% thought this would collapse with Thor Yep. Because
that was when I thought I'd kill it too.
I think it's the really, it's the hardest, probably the hardest character to pull off. And Hulk's up there, but they really found a nice way to bring everybody together and make them all work. I mean, they turned Thor into a boob and everybody loves him. So who knew?
Well, I think that was brilliant of Stan Lee, like back when Thor was first created. Let's pick Norse mythology to do a character that we want the American public to get behind. We don't care about our own culture. I'm really shocked that Thor has worked as well as it did. I think there were some concerns when they first were going to do Thor. It was like nobody even knows who this person is unless they're really diehard Marvel fans. But he's one of everybody's favorite characters. They did a great job with
him. Now.
Now. After, that's what I mean.
After Ragnarok and stuff, you know, when they made him a boob. They made him a little bit of a dim bulb and then suddenly – or no. Yeah. You know,
Well, I don't know if that's true.
Well, I think they did the best they could to make him more personable. He's not so much of – this is the mistake that some other universes may make where you're dealing with characters that are gods amongst men. And yet what they did with Thor is they made him a god, sure, and he is among men, okay. But he's fallible just like everybody else is. And he has to go back and forth between huge cosmic powers and itty-bitty little brain.
So you're saying basically they made him more relatable versus more a boob.
Right.
Right.
I was going to bring this up later, but this is actually a perfect place to do it now. I almost had a problem with Thor Ragnarok. It's one of the few Marvel movies that I didn't see right when it came out because the humor in the trailers kind of turned me off to it. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, now they're just getting ridiculous.
Well, you missed out.
Well, I watched it. I know. I watched it, and I was kind of making the same complaint. My daughter was watching a little bit of it with me, and she said, Dad, they're in the Guardians of the Galaxy universe. And I'm thinking that's a perfect way to relate to that because the Guardians of the Galaxy is by far –
spin-off, basically.
It's ridiculous. But apparently in this universe, when you get out into space, not only does stuff get dangerous, it gets a little bit goofy. And that's just all that they did was kind of put Thor into that goofy Guardians of the Galaxy mind frame. And once I made that connection, I was fine with it. I thought it was great.
It's a lack of oxygen, probably.
That must be it. Mm-hmm. Lack of gravity, something.
All right. Well, let's start from the beginning. All right. We're going to go through the Marvel Cinematic Universe, basically building the MCU. And we can all agree that Robert Downey Jr. and by extension director Jon Favreau built this universe. But many forget he was washed up as an actor when Iron Man came out, and Jon Favreau championed him for him because people didn't want him because of his past. Insurance companies didn't even want to cover him because they did not know if he would become a liability. So while we're not going to discuss every actor in the MCU because that's way too long of a podcast, we have to talk about Robert Downey Jr. And why do you think Downey Jr. in particular connected with fans?
Well, I think the big thing to remember about Downey Jr. is that he, and about the character of Tony Stark, is they're very much kind of the same person. They're both brilliant geniuses in what they do. They both are personable and have and connect with people very easily, and they're massively flawed in their addictions. And Tony Stark, you know, actually, I'm almost about to say Robert Downey Jr. Actually, I meant to say Robert Downey Jr., but I said and Tony Stark because, well, they're now the same person.
They are.
Downey Jr. just you watch him in anything he's done, especially since this, and he, you know, at any given moment, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what kind of decision he's going to make, and you feel like you're watching somebody look at every single angle. And he's just a lot of fun, and you can see how good he is just by in Iron Man, the first Iron Man, the way he interacts with the robots. It's like they're people. And they might as well be people to him. It's just neat. It's neat to see what he does.
Anybody doubt him? I've always loved him as an actor, but as soon as they cast him, I'm like, well, this is curious. You're going to put one of the most notable character actors who basically just spiraled into the abyss. I mean, with his alcoholism or drug addiction, whatever it was he had, his storied past, his problems. You're going to put him in charge of a possible universe? And I don't think at that time we even knew it was going to be a universe. We just knew it was going to be this big budget Marvel movie. Marvel's striving to do something right. And
yeah, at that time we had no idea what the idea of a universe was.
Right.
Yeah, the big cinematic universes didn't exist until this. This is really the first one that's pulled it off well.
But they obviously have it a plan. And to realize that to look back and realize their plan was to put all their future and fate and roll the dice on this guy who's had so many problems in his life. And granted, he's out of that. I mean, he worked himself out of it, but That's a huge gamble. I mean, we always talk, or people, fans always talk about the Marvel Universe being a big gamble just with the movies in general. To put them all in his hands, I think, is probably the biggest gamble they made.
Well, talent succeeds. That's pretty much a general rule in Hollywood. If you're a really good actor, you'll figure out a way to make it work. Robert Downey Jr. is an amazing actor. He ran his career off the rails on his own. That had nothing to do with his ability as an actor. It was all personal issues with him. He's a phenomenal actor, and John kind of hit it in saying that he's basically being paid a lot of money and carrying this universe by playing himself on camera. I think that helps because it was a character that he could very well relate to and get into, and it set the tone for everything that came after it, the original Iron Man.
Totally agree. I'm just saying that it's extra kudos for Marvel for taking that chance because I'm sure at the time – There had to be people in the room, because there's always a room of people making this decision. There had to be several people in the room going, wait. You're banking our entire future on this guy who has folded several times.
Somebody put their career on the line for him.
Absolutely.
That's the only way I can see that ever happening. Somebody went to the executives at Marvel Studios and said, we have to cast Robert Downey Jr. And I'm sure they said, if this fails, it's on you. Mm-hmm. If we take this chance. I don't know who that was, but I'm sure there's a story there of somebody who went to bat for him.
So why fans connect with him? Because Iron Man, like Scott was saying, Iron Man is very an ancillary character, or secondary character in the comic book world. At the time, anyway. I mean, I didn't even know who Iron Man was, and I'm a big comic book fan. I mean, I knew the character, but I didn't know the extent of his mythology and everything. He just never excited me. He's a big robot guy, a drunk and a robot guy. Why is that guy connecting with fans? I mean, what about it? Was it just because the movie was great? Was it because of his performance? Was it Jeff Bridges wasn't playing Rooster Cogburn? You know, what was it that made fans go, love this movie, let's see more of this?
It's a flashy character. I mean, let's face it, Tony's a dick. But he's a relatable dick. Everybody likes him. He's very charismatic. And they had to launch this universe. If they had this whole thing mapped out from the very beginning, they had to have. And to launch something this big, they had to have an attention-grabbing, flashy, shiny thing at the very beginning, or nobody would have paid attention to it. Tony Stark and Iron Man is very flashy. It's very attention-grabbing. And I think that's why they went with it.
Let's go a different way on this.
Okay.
Up until Iron Man, we a lot of the big-name Marvel characters have hit the screen, and sure, they were fantastical, they're amazing, they did all these things, and but they wanted to create something that, in the time of, we're still talking about, this is happening around the time of Batman Begins and Dark Knight and all that other hoopla. So the people are telling movie creators that we want something that's like Batman but different. And the only character in Marvel that kind of fits that whole Batman but different mold is Tony Stark. He is nearly the complete opposite, with the exception of their superpower is that they have a lot of money.
I think that's a really good point, actually. He's a human superhero. There's nothing special about him except his bank account. And that's something that a lot of people can relate to, I think.
And that's a great way to usher us into this, because you got to think, you got to buy people into what you're creating. You got to say, okay, well, look, we're going to keep it more or less realistic, with the exception of these amazing robot suits. But we're going to also just make it a rich guy, and people can relate to that a lot quicker and a lot easier than they would somebody who can fly, or somebody who can do this, or somebody who's can turn themselves invisible. If you want to usher somebody in, you introduce them to somebody like them and then move from there.
So you're saying we're all drunk philanthropists, millionaire playboys? What?
Geniuses.
Well, I know you are.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Thank you. Appreciate that. All right. Well, I guess that kind of makes sense. At the end of Iron Man, we were treated to a stinger at the end of the movie that hinted at a larger cinematic world. And now none of us can leave any movie before the credits are over. So thanks a lot for that, jackasses. How do you feel about how movie – I mean, seriously, I'm watching romantic comedies. I'm like, well, I got to stay till the end, because you never know. They could be connected to Marvel or something. I don't know. They could be connected somewhere. How do you feel about the fact that now movies use the stinger? And the stinger is the after-credits scenes, or after, you know.
I think that I'm kind of a mixed mind about it. I love the Stingers. I think they're awesome. And I think that was a brilliant thing that Marvel did all the way back to the very beginning to tie into the next movie in line. That being said, after a 2.5-hour movie, when I really have to go to the bathroom, sitting there through 5 or 6 minutes of credits waiting for the last Stinger drives me crazy sometimes. But if you don't, you kind of have to at this point. Like Everybody who didn't sit through the credits for Thor Ragnarok, the beginning of Infinity War would make no sense if you didn't see that Stinger. So they're almost required viewing at this point. And you can tell who the real Marvel fans are. Like when I went to see Black Panther.
We're using that terminology, the real fans.
Well, huh? No, here's my point though. When we went to go see Black Panther in the theater, a lot of people went to see that. And it was the first Marvel movie they'd ever seen because it was geared towards a certain demographic. Mm-hmm. When the movie ended, easily 3/4 of the theater got up and left when the credits started to roll.
Oh, because they didn't have that.
Because they didn't have the Marvel knowledge. When I went to see Infinity War yesterday and the credits started to roll, there's not one person in the theater moved. Everybody knew the Stingers were coming. So it's almost like a way that you can sit in a theater and go, okay, this person's never seen a Marvel movie before because the credits just started and they just got up and left. Mm-hmm. And you can miss a lot of really important information if you don't see those Stingers.
I like it when most of the movies these days are starting to use Stingers for whatever reason. And it doesn't have to hint to me that something special is coming down the road or anything else like that. It's like one more little morsel or bite of something that's great. And it kind of winks at you and it says, hey, how you doing? And I'm like, hey, hi back. I'm doing great. That was fun. And I like it.
You talk to your Stingers? What the hell is wrong with you, man? You're like, hey, what's up, Stinger? That is totally not.
It's John.
An item.
It's like totally flirting with me. It's making bedroom eyes. I like it.
Why do you sound surprised, Aaron? It's John.
I just sound creeped out. Is really what the sound should allude to.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm okay with it. I don't know why you have to have a problem.
Here's the thing that I love that Marvel does it. I don't love that everybody tries to copy it because so many other movies don't do it as well. They're not, for one thing, nobody can really build the same universe well. So they're constantly teasing things that they shouldn't be or whatever. I mean, you go watch Justice League, which I really like Justice League. Don't really care what anybody thinks. I'm a big fan. And then you have that Stinger, which set up a world that now we don't even think is going to happen. So, I mean, it was just a waste of a Stinger. And
it's a world we don't think it's going to happen because of what we know outside of the movies. If we weren't aware of what's going on outside of the movies, like, you know, Affleck's getting some stupid Phoenix tattoo and talking about how he's having his midlife crisis. If we didn't know that, we would think, hey, that Stinger was pretty cool.
Yeah, well, it's not just Justice League either, because like at the end of Kong Skull Island, they had a tie into Godzilla, the Stinger tied in with
Monarch. Watch your mouth.
Dude, that universe is not going to happen.
I think it might.
You watch your mouth. That is going to happen.
I want it to.
They're working on King Kong versus Godzilla right now. Uh-huh. As we sit here.
Yeah, I believe you. I'll believe it when I see it. What was the monsters one? The other one where they were going to tie in Dracula and all the others? Didn't Dracula the
Mummy?
The Mummy had a Stinger for it. That is another universe where they're saying it's probably not going to happen. I think
that's definitely not going to happen.
I think studios have seen the success that Marvel had with it, and they think that this is the only way to do it, is to use a Stinger to go, oh, hey, there's going to be more. This is going to be a universe because it worked for Marvel. You can't always recreate success.
You know, that leads us into the next point. After Iron Man, we had Incredible Hulk, Iron Man 2, then Thor, Captain America, and finally the Avengers. Officially, we now had a cinematic universe, which we've already alluded to several times. We had one. Holy crap, this worked. Sequels that aren't sequels, movies that connect but don't really have to. And since then, every single studio has tried to duplicate it. Even Transformers is trying to make a cinematic universe. Whatever. And most have failed, or at the very best, struggled with it. So what is it that Marvel is understanding about cinematic universes that everybody else seems to miss, John?
I think Marvel, Potterverse, Star Trek, I think they all do something that everyone seems to forget, which is there are hard and fast rules for that world, and they affect everybody. They affect every movie, and you have to follow along with those. I think the ability to go back and look at things from the movies and make sure you tie it into each other is there. You can see the web working and everything, and I think that's where you start going, I'm in a world here. I'm not just seeing like another Transformers movie. I'm where it's just Transformers on the screen. Marvel and the Potterverse and Star Trek, I'm in those worlds. I'm part of it, and it lets me know that there's more out there to be seen. And I think that's what everyone seems to miss.
I think John's got a good point. I think one of the things that Marvel did that really no other studio has done, because they're trying to play catch up with Marvel. I mean, let's face it, Marvel's now the bar that everybody's trying to clear when it comes to a cinematic universe.
Good luck with that.
They had this written out through the end of the adventure when they started.
One would think, anyway.
Yeah, like J.K. Rowling with the Potterverse. She knew how that was going to end before she ever started writing Sorcerer's Stone. And I think having a coherent vision from beginning to end lets you keep that world in sync, like John was talking about. Mm-hmm. There are rules.
Right.
There's a timeline. They tie together in a way that makes sense. They're not trying to mash something together and see what sticks, because they already had all this mapped out. Everybody who's trying to play catch-up is just trying to mash stuff together and hope that it works. And that's never going to be as successful.
Yeah, and I would add to that, what people seem to forget, and especially with Iron Man, Incredible Hulk, Captain America, Thor, those movies worked completely on their own. They didn't need any connection whatsoever. The stinger is really what connected most of those first movies. You know, there's a little bit as it went, Coulson kind of connected. But if you didn't see Iron Man and Coulson popped up in Thor, it didn't take away from Thor, because that movie worked fine on its own. Captain America worked fine on its own. All these movies worked fine on their own. That's what led to the universe. And what I think people try to do is they keep trying to connect them during the movie, which makes the movie feel jumbled. You know, you go to the DCEU, it's jumbled. I mean, they're trying to incorporate elements that connect everything, and it doesn't quite work. Transformers might work. I mean, we don't know, because they do have a world established. We haven't seen their connection, so we don't know yet. Well, based on the last movie, not so much. But the Dark Universe, what I think that the Mummy, they made two big mistakes. They had a major actor involved, which hasn't happened with a Marvel Universe. They haven't had a big named actor take a role. I mean, Downey Jr. is only big name because of Iron Man, not before that. He was just a character actor, really. And then you had so much of the world building in the middle of the Mummy that took you completely out of the story of the Mummy, completely ripped you out. That whole Russell Crowe subplot about this, whatever the hell they were doing, completely ripped you out of that story. That's what I think people keep making the mistake of. Make movies, at least the first few, that don't need to connect to actually be part of the universe. They connect them at the stinger, connect them at the very end, connect them very subtly. Stop making 20-minute subplots that connect the movies.
Marvel's been brilliant with that. It's the effortless way that they do that that's kind of what I was alluding to too, which is like Black Widow shows up in the very first Iron Man as Tony Stark's assistant and has a big thing at the end.
Second one.
Coulson and Hawkeye show up in the first Thor. Coulson has a somewhat bigger part. Hawkeye's only on screen for less than a minute in the second Thor movie. So
what to do? I'm starting to root for this guy.
Right. That whole part. And it's like, it doesn't draw attention to itself when you're watching that movie. But then when you see the Avengers, you're like, oh, wait a minute. That was a dude that was in the first Thor that was, you know, rooting for Thor to get to the hammer.
He was in Iron Man 1 too, I believe.
Was he in the first Iron Man? I didn't think so. I thought the first time we saw him was in Thor.
No. He showed up in one of the Iron Mans because he's trying to get Pepper Potts to make an appointment. No, it was the first one. Oh, you
mean Coulson.
That's what I said, Coulson.
Yeah. No, I said Hawkeye.
He's talking about Hawkeye.
I'm talking about Hawkeye.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Yep. I'm following. I know what he's saying.
Using characters in such small roles early on in the series and then giving them much, much bigger roles later on is why this whole universe works, because it's effortless. The audience makes the connection later. They're like, oh, I've seen that dude before. And that's how everything ties together.
And it's a great way to test the character too. Instead of going back to the Mummy, because that's the one that just boggles my mind. That movie could have been there are moments and elements in there that are freaking great, and they ruin it because they just were rushing to make a universe. But give us a taste of a character. Give Russell Crowe having one scene for 2 minutes instead of 15 minutes in the movie. And I think that works so much better than what they did. Like Black Widow, she's great in Iron Man 2, and it makes you want to see her more because she's not in it. She's not overwhelming the film. You know what I mean? So right. you want to see more. And you can test that character. See if it works. See if it doesn't work. Maybe it's not going to work. And you know what? We'll have to write her out. It's Jar Jar. We're going to take her out of the next couple movies. You know, that's how you can test characters. And I think that's important to building a real world.
You know, I think the Godzilla monster movie thing did something brilliant. Now, granted, we only have two movies for that, but we had Godzilla and then we had King Kong. But for King Kong, they went back to, what was it, Korean War or Vietnam?
Vietnam.
They went back to Vietnam, and you had to completely forget that the two movies are connected, because they don't feel connected, with the exception of the mention of, what's the name of that organization?
Monarch.
Monarch. So with the exception of Monarch, they don't even feel connected until the very end. And I think that's something that they're starting to do right, and hopefully they continue to go down that same path where it feels more and more connected as they go along. I just think that you're right. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
That's a long way to say.
I lost everything I was saying, and then I just was like, "Well, we're all right."
One of the interesting things about those two movies that they do tie together, but Monarch is the only thing that ties them together, because splitting the time frame by that much, from the Vietnam War up through Godzilla, which took place now, is that no characters crossed over. None. There's not a single character that appears in Kong.
Not yet.
Well, they killed most of them, so that's going to be tough. But I think it's interesting that they're making that work without any character crossovers yet.
Didn't you just say like 5 minutes ago they weren't making it work?
Well, you apparently have overruled me on that, because you guys seem to think that it is working. So I'm crossing my fingers. I want that to work.
It's two movies. It's a little too soon to say whether or not it's working.
Yeah, but those
two movies are still pretty great.
All right, that's a perfect segue, I think, to move on to the next topic, which is, along the way, a couple actors had to be replaced. Most notably, Terrence Howard. Just ask him. He'll tell you all about it. He loves to talk about it.
Yeah, he does.
And Edward Norton. Mostly their casting has been pretty spot on, though. So who has been your biggest surprise that embodied a hero or villain better than you ever would have given them credit for, Scott?
I'm going to talk about a recast first, because Edward Norton kind of sucked as Bruce Banner, and Mark Ruffalo is awesome. I think that was one of the best choices that...
Really? You didn't like Norton at all?
I did not. I did not think he worked. I think he was fine as the Hulk when he was doing his motion capture. And
when it's not Edward Norton?
When it's not Edward Norton, he was fine. I think Mark Ruffalo is perfect as Bruce Banner. I think he's exactly what they needed. He's a charismatic actor. He's better, in my opinion, as an actor. And
I'm glad you said that, because it's kind of against the law to say Edward Norton wasn't good in something. People seem to think he's amazing.
I'm not a fan. Never been a fan.
I think he's Edward Norton.
He's overrated.
Other than Primal Fear, I'll give you that one, and maybe American History X. Nothing else has really impressed me.
Sorry, Ed, you can stop listening now, but I think you're overrated as an actor. I think Mark Ruffalo is a lot better. Ooh, that's just my own opinion.
He just slammed his iPod player.
I know.
I'm sure he still
has an iPod. I really loved him in Death to Smoochie.
Wow. That's all right.
That was the one that stood out to me when I saw that in the show notes, was like, that was just brilliant, I thought. I thought the Hulk was always the weak character in the series. They've tried several times to do that movie, and they just couldn't get it right. And with his appearance in Avengers, with Mark Ruffalo playing the part, they finally got it right. I would watch a standalone Hulk movie now, just because they finally got that character figured out.
I second the motion.
Oh, really? That was your pick, too?
Well, no, my pick is actually somebody else, but I like what he's saying, and I'm actually surprised he didn't mention who my pick was, because I know it's one of his favorite characters.
Who?
Chris Evans' Cap.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
When they said, you know who's going to be Cap, I said, okay, who? Well, the kid who played Sunspot or Firestorm or whatever the Fantastic Four character, Johnny Storm guy, that guy.
Oh, you went through three different characters before you got the right one. Nice job.
Right. So the guy who's going to play Cap is going to be that guy, the guy who's funny and makes all the jokes and does finger guns at the camera and is low rent Ryan Reynolds. He's going to be Cap. Okay.
Whoa. Low rent Ryan Reynolds?
At the time, he was low rent Ryan Reynolds.
I've never heard that. That's awesome.
Chris Evans, I'm sorry, Ryan, if you're listening, but when it comes to dramatic fare, he is twice the actor Ryan Reynolds is, Chris Evans is, my opinion.
That may be so, but at the time, he didn't do much drama or anything. He did like teen comedies and he was the funny guy.
Okay. All right. And that worked for you more? Like he surprised you, brought you into his world kind of thing?
Yeah, he surprised me. Like when he showed up as Cap, I was shocked it was him, number one. And number two, I'm like, I'll go anywhere when you tell me, man. Just tell me. Let's go. I'm all about you being Cap. I mean, he really is Cap. And I'm so surprised about how it turned out, but I can't imagine anybody else playing that character.
And I think that's why I didn't bring that up, is because Chris Evans was genetically engineered to play that part. He's perfect. And I've gotten so used to him being in that character that it's like it's not a surprise for me that he's so perfect in it, because I don't think there's another actor in Hollywood who could have done that as well.
It's a hard role when you think about it.
It is.
He's so earnest that, you know, it's kind of like Tony Stark says, it makes me want to punch you in your perfect face, because he is so devout and earnest and good, and everything he does is for the right reasons. And that character can get grating if you don't have the right guy doing it, because we're a cynical world. We don't want somebody being that good. Come on, have some faults. Captain America doesn't have any faults. He just does what he thinks is right all the time, and he lives by that.
Well, one of my daughters brought this up. We were having almost this exact discussion about Captain America after we saw the movie yesterday. And it's interesting to think about that he is the leader of the Avengers. Everybody looks to him when they need an answer. Tony Stark may be like the heart of the Avengers, but whenever they need a plan, like a tactical plan, it's that they always defer to Cap to tell them what to do. Chronologically, age-wise, he is by far the youngest member of the team. He may be 70 years old because he spent whatever it is. But physically, he's what, early 20s? If that, I mean, he had the experiences in World War II that gave him those leadership qualities, but from a physiological standpoint, he's by far the youngest member of the team, which I think is interesting. That's a good point. Except for Spider-Man, who doesn't count because he's like still in high school. He's like a junior member. I mean, he counts, but not as like a leader for the team.
You mean Miles Morales?
Everybody defers to Cap's judgment, and he has less life experience than anybody else on the team. I just find that interesting.
That's fair. That's one character I didn't have any doubts about, just because I love Chris Evans and I had faith. My biggest one, Rocket Raccoon.
Yes.
Rocket Raccoon. Oh, yes. Because as soon as I saw that movie, I'm like, no. Okay. For one, outside of Andy Serkis, motion capture work never seemed to work. To have a character that you can actually follow and get behind and actually believe is a real character, near impossible to pull off. I've only seen it pulled off with Gollum and the ape in Planet of the Apes, Caesar. Only time I've ever seen it pulled off. So when I first saw the trailer and Rocket Raccoon's going to be in there, and I didn't know what the hell this was. I'm like, okay, this is going to be the stupidest Marvel movie I've ever heard of in my life. And the entire movie, ever since I've seen Rocket Raccoon, I actually believe there's a raccoon running around, or a rabbit as it were, running around.
that was great.
Just running around, making snide comments and stealing people's legs and everything else that he does. I just can't believe they pulled that off and did it so well. And I'm like, there are so many movies that get building a character, a completely CGI character, wrong, and they freaking nailed it to a T and made people that were completely disingenuous to the whole idea come on board. And that to me is my favorite.
I had the exact opposite reaction to Rocket when I saw him in the Guardians trailer. I had no idea what the Guardians of the Galaxy was. I had never even heard of it. And I saw the trailer online for the first time, and I was just mesmerized by the whole thing. And I got it on my phone. I downloaded it on YouTube on my phone, and I took it to Vicky, who was in the living room. And I'm like,
Vicky's your wife.
Yeah, Vicky's my wife. And I'm like, you got to watch this trailer. And she goes, what is it? I said, I have absolutely no idea, but it has a raccoon with a machine gun riding a tree. I have to see this movie. I mean, Rocket.
If you tell me any movie that has a machine gun riding raccoon tree thing, I'm in.
Yep, that was me. I'm like, I have no clue even after watching the trailer what this movie is about, but I have to go see it.
But you got to be honest. I mean, John, you love comic books, so I'm sure you probably knew Guardians. Did you think it was going to work as well as it did?
You have to understand a little bit how my brain works sometimes. When somebody tells me that a movie company is going to do this, this, and this, and it just sounds too crazy to work, I'm like, let's see what they do, especially if it's Marvel. It's like I'm not gonna try to develop feelings for what they're doing, because clearly somebody over there knows what I'm thinking and they want to do what I want. So
okay, so you just don't have normal logic like everybody else does. Right.
No, it's just too crazy for me to be like, okay, you know what? If you told me that it was Michael Bay and he's going to give me Rocket Raccoon and Groot, I'm going to be like, no. Groot's going to be speaking in a French accent for no good reason. Someone's going to forget how to speak in Spanish, even though the story probably requires it. And Rocket's going to be voiced by Mark Wahlberg. No.
Oh, just think now. Now I'm going to have that in my brain. What if it would have been Mark Wahlberg? How would that play out?
That actually might have worked, depending on how he played it.
I'm the raccoon doing his job.
Yeah.
Say hello to your mother.
Say hello to your mother, tree.
By the way, you missed an awesome motion capture when you said there were two or three that worked.
Yeah.
Benedict Cumberbatch motion captured Smaug, the dragon.
Yeah, Smaug is really great. That's true.
You know, another character that surprised me was how much I appreciated Ben Kingsley as the Mandarin.
Oh, God, really?
I don't know why, but I love Trevor. I think Trevor's great. I think the fact that they put that spin on the Mandarin like they did was fantastic. I was expecting the Mandarin, one of the most feared comic book villains that the Marvel Universe has. I was expecting this guy with rings that does amazing things, and it's Trevor.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of cool, but it was so not what I wanted while I was watching that movie.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where in hindsight, it's awesome to see Trevor pop out when he finally gets on the wrong end of a gun. But I really wanted like the Mandarin to be the Mandarin. And that just didn't happen when I was watching that movie. So I was a little pissed off at the time. But
and Pepper Potts has the Deus Ex Machina of that movie. And have we seen any more fireball from her since then?
No, they fixed her. Tony talks about that at the end.
Okay.
He tinkered that out of her, I guess.
Whatever.
That's a stretch.
That's what they said.
Yeah, the man fixed the woman. How many women are now furious that sentence was said?
Well, you said it.
You're about to find out
when the emails come in. That is Scott Clark at the Hollywood Outsider.
What do they not do so well? Like, if you had to find a fault, Scott.
Marvel can't science.
What do you mean?
I mean, we've gone from space killing people to Thor basically breathing and talking and having a conversation in space.
No, they actually made that made sense.
Really? Please explain it to me.
Please elaborate.
It made no sense to me whatsoever.
Well, when they bring them, well, this is going into something into quote unquote spoiler area, but
well, don't spoil anything.
Don't.
Is it for Infinity War?
Yes, that's the scene that I referenced.
Then don't mention it until Infinity War. You bring it back. We'll table that.
That's science and some timeline continuity. They keep jumping a little bit in timelines about how long events have taken apart from each other.
Mm-hmm.
They've screwed that up a couple times, but that's more editing than anything else. There's not much that Marvel does badly. I mean, their casting is perfect. The acting's amazing. The storylines are engaging and great. This is me being picky, but it seems like science is something that they don't do well.
And villains. My pick would be villains for the most.
Yeah.
On average. Obviously, Thanos is great. And then you have a couple others that might have been better. But then you have the Ronins of the world. And I love Guardians of the Galaxy, but that's one of the worst movie villains I've ever encountered. Even with a dance off, he just doesn't work for me in any way, shape, or form. And then you've got, I don't know how many. In Iron Man, it's always a freaking robot. I mean, it's a big robot or a multitude of robots. I mean, Iron Man 2 and 3, there was a multitude of robots. And then in the Avengers, there's a bunch of space robots. And then it's like, find a freaking villain that isn't the same damn thing every single time. So when I think of the fault, I think of the villains.
Well, you bring up the villains later in the show, and I'm going to pick a fight with you later, so I'll wait.
I'm not saying there aren't exceptions.
I think that what we got in the way of villains, now that we're 10 years into this and we got the movie that we just got, I think the villains were kind of on purpose like this, because the villains we got are, yeah, sure, they're scary and stuff like that, but they're also kind of boobs. They're kind of not that big of a deal. They are secondary villains. They're not something that we need to really worry too much about, and it gives us an opportunity to get to know Cap. We get to know the Guardians of the Galaxy a lot better, and there were a lot of them, hence why I think Ronan was like so forgotten because we had more time with the Guardians than we did with Ronan. The villains were nothing more than a vehicle or a heel against our heroes, and they were nothing more than just a way to tell the hero's story and get us to know them better.
Yeah, and they sucked most of the time. So, I mean, rolling back a couple minutes to what you just said, where you said, and they were scary. No, they weren't ever scary. There's maybe two that I would find scary. Vulture's one of them, and Thanos is one of them. Everybody else is kind of, you know what? I'll give you the cap, because I really think Winter Soldier has a great concept of how to make a villain bigger than, you know, with Hydra and everything else. That was a really great way to do it. Everybody else has so many weak-ass villains. Thor the Dark World. I don't even know what the villain was in that. It's a big... The Blob, I think, is what it was.
The Dark Elves.
Yeah. Whatever. It just... there's so much suck involved.
With one exception. I was going to bring this up later, but I guess we'll do the villain discussion now. Loki was awesome. I'm sorry, but Loki, as flawed as he is, he played it perfectly. He's one of the best cast villains I've ever seen.
Well, you can hold on to your favorite villain, brother.
Okay.
You keep that to your... We got to go through something before we get there. John, what does you find fault with in the MCU?
You know what? I have that question blank. I can't really think of a lot of things. I can't think... Like, with the exception of what was brought up, there's not much that I would really give them a hard time about. And I'm not saying they're perfect. I'm just saying that as far as what I need to poke them with a stick for, it's not worth it.
Yeah, I had to be picky. There's really not much.
I didn't. Villains. Oh, right there.
All right. Right.
So we're not going to chart almost 20 movies. So tell us who your overall favorite hero is in these films and why, in particular, you connect with that hero. John?
Well, I'm going to... My first choice, I know that is going to be chosen by at least...
You
by
get one
of
choice,
you.
My friend. You get one choice. Well, your overall favorite hero.
Time out.
No, there's no timeouts. One hero.
No.
Yeah.
Here's me leaving the floor open for the hero that I know somebody's going to talk about.
No, you pick your overall favorite hero. That's what you... This is and what I'm that going, is, your favorite.
You got to I go first, John. Go ahead. Don't worry about stealing mine.
Yeah.
All right, so that we're not all talking about the same guy. Doctor Strange. I love Doctor Strange. He is by far my second favorite hero.
Okay.
In the MCU. I like his story. I like who he is. I think I identify a lot with the kind of like mental issues that he tends to have. And I like how he works through it all and makes it something that is just magical. I mean, I like him a lot. He's by far my second favorite.
That's cool. We weren't talking about second favorite. Scotch, what were you going to say? Which was your actual favorite?
I almost went with Doctor Strange as my favorite. So
really?
Yeah, he just almost screwed himself by trying to outthink everybody else. Way to go, John. But he's right. I know exactly what he was thinking. My favorite character in the MCU is Cap.
Yeah.
Thank you. He has to be. He is what all of us want to be. When we look in the mirror, that's what all of us would like to see. Somebody
pretty
who,
close.
Who, yeah. Okay. Go with that.
With my shirt on and the lights off.
He does the right thing because it's the right thing. Not for any other ulterior motive other than this is the right thing to do. And that's – everybody would love to have that conviction and stand by it 100% of the time, and none of us do. So he's basically a perfect human being. And that's what everybody aspires to is Captain America. He's by far my favorite character in the show.
And I will agree.
Well, he's my favorite hero.
Yeah. I will agree with that as well. And I'm not going to pick a secondary one because I can own up to favorite. So my favorite is absolutely Captain America. And to build on what you just said, yes, everything you just said is true. But I also would say his is the only love story and friendships that really work with me in terms of the character in the universe. His romance with Peggy Carter breaks my heart. Every time he mentions her in any capacity,
yeah,
anything that has to do with Peggy just really melts my heart. His I can do this all day, his resilience, that just melts my heart. His affection for Bucky and I'll do anything for my friends. One life isn't worth giving up. You know, it just everything he does and says is something that connects with me, and that's why he's easily my favorite. Tony's a fun character to watch, but he's never been my favorite.
He's too much of a dick to be a favorite. He literally can't get out of the way of his own ego.
There's a lot of people that are okay with dickish ways.
No. There's a lot of people who would say that's why he's their favorite.
Nope. He's not even in my top five. So.
Wow.
Yeah, he's not in my top five either. He's
in Marvel's top five.
Well, that's because he's making him money, but he's not in my top five favorite characters.
Is not this simpler? Is this not your natural state? It's the unspoken truth of humanity that you crave subjugation. The bright lure of freedom diminishes your life's joy in a mad scramble for power, for identity. You were made to be ruled. In the end, you will always kneel.
Not to men like you.
There are no men like me.
There are always men like you.
Look to your elder people. Let him be an example.
You know, the last time I was in Germany and saw a man standing above everybody else, we ended up disagreeing.
All right, so you brought up Loki. Is that your favorite villain? Let's do favorite villain.
It was until yesterday.
Really?
Yeah.
Now you can speak to Thanos without spoiling
anything. I'm not going to spoil anything when I talk about Thanos, but until now, Thanos has been this weird purple dude in a chair who just kills people for fun and is creepy and kind of evil. And I'm not saying he's not evil, but man, I can relate to him a lot more now after this movie. They gave him depth that he didn't have until now. And we can get into it more later in the spoiler cast. Circle back to this because there are some things I want to talk about. But I think Loki is still my favorite villain, but man, Thanos came really close to topping him off. It worked for me. But Loki is just so batshit crazy in everything that he's in, and he does it so brilliantly that he is by far my favorite villain, except for Thanos.
All right, John, what about you? Who's your second favorite villain?
my second favorite villain is Hela.
Oh,
really?
From Ragnarok, huh?
Yeah.
Really?
Okay.
For all the wrong reasons, but yeah. We don't really need to get into those, but it works.
Okay. Mine is none of those, actually. My favorite is Vulture from Spider-Man Homecoming. Surprisingly.
That's a good one.
That's actually a really good pick.
Which is funny because I don't love that movie, but I love Michael Keaton in that movie. He has a plot that I understand, his arc I completely get, why he's so mad and why he wants to do what he does. And, you know, then you have the familial connection, which, you know, is really cool, which I'm not going to talk about because it's still kind of newish. But Michael Keaton just owned that role, and he was trying to do good things, but just doing them very badly. And he's a character I really connected to.
I was gonna say, he's very layered. He's very much a perfect onion of a character. When you get me to go, hey, I'll get you, I'll buy, what do you want me to buy? Whatever will help, I'll be there with you. I'll do that. Let's buy some stuff off of Vulture. I'm all for it. And those moments where he stops and goes through those thoughts that he goes through and makes the decisions to, I'm trying to be so kind and not spoil anything for that movie on anyone, but the decisions he makes, especially at the very end, you aren't quite sure if he's being good about it or what his motives are to do those things. It really is pretty neat to see that happen with Vulture.
When you can relate to a bad guy and why he's doing what he's doing, why he is the way he is, that makes a really compelling, awesome villain. Which is why I almost supplanted Loki with Thanos after watching Infinity War yesterday. Mm-hmm. I get where he's coming from. He has a point. And that's all I'll say until we get to the spoiler cast. But what Thanos is doing, I get where he's coming from. I do now anyway. You can relate to it. Mm-hmm. So to me, that was a fascinating part of the movie that I watched yesterday.
I'm just letting you know, for people that have seen Infinity War – Scott just started scaring me a little bit. But all right, we're going to move.
I stopped. I stopped myself.
No, I mean the fact that you are all on board with his plan.
Oh, no. Well scares me. I didn't say I was on board with his plan. I said it makes sense.
No, there's it's cool, a difference. Man. I'm not riding in a plane with you anytime soon. All right.
There's only two of you sitting in that room right now.
Are there any of the
bigger than he is
of the MCU heroes? And I can run, bitch. Are there any of the MCU heroes and villains that you still struggle with? For whatever your reasons. Anybody you still struggle with, John?
I want more Hulk. I need more Hulk in the MCU. I think that he should, if not get his own movie, I think he should just pop up every now and again. Not just Hulk, but I need more Bruce Banner. Even though he showed up in Ragnarok and then he didn't show up in Black Panther, but then we get him again in this movie, I don't think we get enough of Hulk and Banner. I want to see more of that relationship because it's becoming very clear that they have a relationship now.
Yeah, I would
agree. Yes.
I think that relationship could be a lot of fun.
I struggle with Thor, honestly.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I love Chris Hemsworth, and I really like Thor. The last couple movies, I haven't liked what they've done with Thor, but I will say in Infinity War that gets changed a little bit, but I didn't like what they did with him in Ragnarok. I really was kind of bummed by that. It really just hit me the wrong way. Outside of him, Black Widow is one where I like Black Widow. I don't need a whole movie from her. They keep talking about they're going to make a movie about her. I don't need that at all. Not even a little bit.
You know what I would watch? I would watch a movie with her and Hawkeye together.
I would do that.
Yes.
If Hawkeye's part of it, yeah.
Their past adventures that they've kind of alluded to and some of the conversations that they've had, that's a movie that I would watch.
You've got a fun back and forth.
Yeah.
But when they're fighting in Civil War and they're making sure the other one's good. Hey, we're still good after this, right?
Yeah, that was awesome.
That was.
And she's obviously a big part of his life hanging out at the house because the kids know her as Uncle Nat, and I think there's a relationship there, a friendship that I would love to see in a standalone movie. But either one of them alone, I don't think a solo movie is going to work. But as a pair, I think they could pull it off.
I'd add Ronan to the I really can't stand him list. I'll mention him at every chance I can because I really hate Ronan as a character.
The one that I'm going to mention is probably going to shock you guys. War Machine needs to be permanently deployed off screen.
I agree.
I am tired of that character. I don't like him. I think his banter.
Not a Don Cheadle fan?
It's not Don Cheadle, it's the character. When Terrence Howard did it, I didn't like it then either. I think he's a secondary character that's gotten way too much screen time, and I'm just not a fan. It feels forced, like they have to throw him in there because he's Tony's buddy, and I just don't. Every time he's on screen, I'm kind of like, oh, this guy again.
You know, I'm the same way because, I mean, every time they throw Bucky on there, you'd think it'd be the same thing. But nope. I like Bucky and Rogers. They feel like real friends.
Yes.
I never feel like. I mean, they're trying to be quippy and banter and stuff, and it just never works for me.
Right, and that's exactly my problem with it. The friendship between Bucky and Steve feels very real, and I like Bucky. He's grown on me in every movie he's been in to the point where I love his character now. I have never liked War Machine. I liked him when he was just at the Pentagon talking to Tony on the phone as like his inside guy. That was great. As soon as they gave him a suit and turned him into a real character of War Machine, I was done at that point. I don't like that character at all.
I was totally against you on this, but now after listening to all your points, you have a good, strong point. I think he can go ahead and just screw himself right off the screen now.
Wow.
All cool. Right. Well, what is your, and John, I swear to God, overall favorite MCU film and one single moment from all of the MCU, not including Infinity War. So overall favorite film and single moment in the MCU. Scott?
I've been on the show, I think this is like my sixth or seventh time. This is the hardest question you've ever asked me.
Seriously?
Yeah, because they're so good, and there are so many moments in these movies that are so good. I could tick off 10 off the top of my head that could interchange for my top spot, depending on what kind of mood I'm in. And I'm talking about moments in the films. My favorite film is pretty much locked in as the original Avengers. I think that was everything I wanted to see in a superhero movie done on screen for the first time. And we keep getting better and they keep expanding upon that, but you never get that, oh my God, I get to see them all at once for the first time. To me, that was the epitome of this is where this series hit its high mark, I think, was with the very first Avengers. for favorite moments, this is the one where there are 10 or 12 that I could just bounce around depending on what kind of mood I'm in. But the one
look who has so many to choose from now.
But, John, the one that I keep coming back to that just stands out as the most heroic moment for me in any of these movies is the old man who stands up to Loki in Germany. I absolutely fell in love with that character, and he's only on screen for like 10 seconds, but that dude is the bravest person in the universe, and I love it.
There will always be men like you.
Yeah, he's just this old German guy who probably lived through the Nazis and said, I'm not doing this again. Mm-hmm. I know this is going to cost me my life, but I'm going to tell this guy exactly what I think of him. I don't have any superpowers. I don't have Tony Stark's toys. I'm just an old man in a tan jacket going to tell this guy he's an asshole. I thought that was the defining moment of everything about this series and why we love it. Mm-hmm. It brings out the best in everybody. And I think that dude is just by far the bravest character in any of these movies. So that's my favorite moment.
All right, John, what about you? Favorite film? I don't care if it's the same one. And favorite moment?
Favorite film is Cap, the first Avenger.
Okay.
Yeah, that would have been my toss-up.
As much as I enjoy all the other movies, that's the one that I come back to the most. That's the one that if I'm in a bad mood, I'll sit down and watch. If it's raining outside, I'll sit down and watch. If I just don't feel like watching something that I need to watch, I will watch that instead. It is just like chicken soup. It really is. I adore the movie. I adore the road that Steve Rogers goes on. Everything about that movie is great. My favorite moment has to be the Cap, Bucky, Iron Man fight in the Civil War. For no other reason than, and it's not even like the entire fight, but that fight, that part of the fight where they're trading the shield back and forth and fighting Iron Man, that is just, as far as visually speaking, straight out of a comic book. It's as if we don't really need to think about how to make the scene, right? Because we have 15 different iterations of this in the comics. Let's just pick one of those. And I really loved seeing that.
That's a good one.
What I love the most about that scene, and out of that whole fight, that like 2 or 3 seconds where they're bouncing the shield back and forth to each other, that directly alludes to where the Captain America comic goes in the comics. Mm-hmm. And I saw that and I was like, oh, that's awesome, because they're using the shield in exactly the same way. And I'm fairly certain that was entirely intentional on the part of Marvel. It was great. That's easily in my top five.
I'm pretty sure everything they do is intentional.
But that was great. John's right. That's a great scene.
That is a great scene. Mm-hmm. My overall favorite movie is The Avengers. It's I think Scott already talked about it, but as much as I love First Avenger and Guardians, actually, those two would be pretty close in together. The Avengers did something I did not think would be possible, bringing all those characters together, making it just a fun movie, you know, with Hulk actually becoming the Hulk we've always wanted to see, throwing Thor around and everything else he does in that movie, you know, puny god, all that stuff in one movie, and you made it work, and every character gets their screen time, I thought was amazing. So that is still, to this day, my favorite superhero movie. You know, followed Dark Knight very, very, very close, but that's my favorite superhero. Now, my favorite moment all time across 19 films. Actually, 19 films. You can throw Infinity War in there. Won't matter. I had a date is my favorite moment of all the movies, because I've never cried in a Marvel movie. Still haven't, except for that one moment, because that was just – I love that relationship. I love Peggy and Steve, and to hear that's the first thing he thinks of when he gets back in the world is, I just wanted to see her. That's all I wanted. I just wanted to see her. And it makes me cry every time I watch it to this day. When I rewatch that movie, that one scene will make me cry.
I agree. I mean, that's a phenomenal scene. When you were talking about the Thor and Hulk, I thought you were going to do what my second favorite one is, which is when they come down off that giant whale thing and Hulk just punches Thor out of the picture for no reason. I don't think I've ever laughed that hard in a movie theater. The first time I saw that, I almost fell out of my chair. I was laughing so hard. So I thought that's where you were going to go.
Yeah. I said Thor earlier. I meant Hulk was throwing Loki around. Right. That's what it was.
Yeah.
That was good, too.
My bad. Because everybody's already written a letter at this point because they heard it. And they're like, no, that was Loki. You got to correct it.
Well, that's not true, because you could have been talking about earlier in the movie where he beats Thor's ass when they're on the carrier.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
That's what you meant.
Exactly. I'm going to go back and redact what I just said, because that's exactly what I meant. My goodness. All right, so this is one's a little bit more personal. What's your favorite personal memory of watching any MCU movie? And it can be either at home or in the theater. Just your favorite personal memory, John.
All right, so my second favorite personal memory.
And there's our running joke for this show.
Yeah, watching beat it in the ground.
And Scott's leaving, by the way. All
right, so when I was watching Winter Soldier for the first time in the theater, having a background and understanding who Winter Soldier was and Captain and everything like that, so I wasn't really surprised about a lot of things that happened. However, there's a woman sitting right behind me. When it was revealed who Winter Soldier was, it was like this, and all of a sudden you hear, it's his friend. I wanted to be that woman so much, just to have that magical feeling of like that reveal hitting somebody like that so hard. Like I loved it. I adored it. I thought it was great. That's my favorite memory.
I have a lot of memories of watching these movies with my family. First time I saw Avengers in the theater was on vacation with my kids down at Universal Studios, which is a great place to see, mm-hmm. you know, a movie for the first time. But I think my favorite memory of all of this goes back to seeing the first Guardians of the Galaxy in the theater for the first time. I got to be a part of the whole experience of that because Scott and I got in my car and drove like 100 miles to the nearest really big IMAX theater. Mm-hmm. And we saw it Thursday, 7 o'clock, very first showing. And all the other hosts of the show saw it at the same time. And Scott and I just had a blast with it. We were sitting right in the middle of the theater. We had perfect seats for IMAX. And when we came out, you all started texting each other immediately because you all saw it at exactly the same time. And I got to be a part of those conversations from Scott's side. And everybody was just so blown away by that movie that I think that's being a part of that for this show and seeing a movie that I had high expectations but no knowledge about at all. I had no idea who those characters were. All I knew is that they just put out a fabulous trailer. To me, that was the best experience I had watching these movies.
Those are all good. Those are all good. I remember that very clearly, and that was a really special moment, because especially with Justin is no longer here, and you know, Brian, and we were all four of us were kind of in that groove, and which really makes me sad because Justin would love Infinity War.
Really? Oh, yeah, he would
love Infinity War.
This would have been the pinnacle of the series for him, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. My favorite moment would be going back to the first Avenger when I saw it in the theater. And at the very end, after I had a date, which I already talked about, and I'm crying like a stupid fool. And a lady in front of me was getting up to leave because the movie was over and the credits were rolling and I'm just bawling. And she just looked back at me and said, "You're crying over Captain America?" And I went, "No, I'm crying over Peggy." And she just nodded and she goes, "Oh, I get that." I was like, "Okay. All right. So get out of here, lady. And you're going to miss the Stinger credit too."
Yeah, right.
So it was very, very funny. But it would have actually been, you know, that would be my second favorite memory because my first was definitely the Guardians one. But since Scott already alluded to it, you know, that's what we do here.
Well, if we're doing second favorites,
no,
because
we're not.
John,
just kidding.
Oh, let me,
but I mean, you kind of, you guys are trying to say something. I don't know what it is.
My kids are crazy for Bucky. We've talked about Bucky so much over this favorite segment here that I think a lot of us really like that character. To my kids, Bucky is the hero of Winter Soldier. Hmm. It's not Cap. They loved Bucky's character and they've loved it ever since. Because he's like the other half of Steve. They've been best friends for so long. To get to see that relationship come back together, my girls absolutely love that character. And that's thinking about them seeing Winter Soldier for the first time and realizing that Bucky wasn't dead and now he's the Winter Soldier was like, I got to have that same moment that John was talking about where I got to see somebody make that connection and go, "Oh, that's so cool." So they've loved Bucky's character ever since then.
And it was cool. We got to see it with John and the Petersons came into town. Stephen Amy Peterson came into town and John was here and we all went and saw Thor Ragnarok. I wish that was a fun memory, except Thor Ragnarok I didn't love as much as other people. So the movie is so much, not so much, but that was a fun memory. And now we have our listener top. We polled everybody in our Facebook group and said, what are your favorite Marvel films, not including Infinity War? Because, you know, I am a big fan of right after a Marvel movie comes out, it's everybody's favorite. It feels to be, you know, it seems to be that's what everybody does. Oh, that one's my favorite. Black Panther's my favorite. You know, Spider-Man Homecoming's my favorite. Yeah. All right. Let it settle and then see where you sit. So now we have it where people are settled. And here's what they thought their top 10 favorite MCU films are. Are you guys ready for what listeners think?
Sure.
Whatever. All right.
Number 10, Doctor Strange. Number 9, Captain America, The First Avenger. Well, this list is already wrong.
Yes, it is.
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is number 8. I understand that. That's probably because of Kurt Russell. Number 7 is Black Panther. Number 6 is Captain America, Civil War. Number 5 is Thor Ragnarok. What?
What?
Number 4 okay. is Iron Man. Number 3 is The Avengers. Number 2 is Captain America, Winter Soldier. And this is by a hefty margin, the number one movie in the MCU, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay.
You know what? Here's what I will say about that one. I think it's the one movie that seems to, because it's like the Star Wars or the MCU. It really goes across several demographics. It really connects to people, families, you know, and it's a little bit more lighthearted, a lot more lighthearted.
So. To me, Guardians, as great as the movie is, and it probably would occupy my number two or number three slot, it's the one movie out of the entire series that you could completely disconnect it from the MCU and still have a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons why I love it. If this had nothing to do with Marvel, I would still love Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. All right. Well, guess what? Now it is time to go into a couple other things. Patreon supporters, one thing before we get to our What's This Movie of the Week, we want to take a second and extend our thank you to our Patreon supporters who donated very graciously at patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. That's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. You can get 2 bonus episodes. There's several different tiers you can sign up for. You can just throw us a buck to help us out. You can get some early access to stuff, or you can get complete bonus episodes. Whatever you want, you find the tier and sign up, and I hope you guys enjoy that. It's a lot of fun. Thank you so much. And we also have What's This Movie before we get to our spoiler cast.
Yeah, What's This Movie? So each week, or we try to come up with a fun and engaging
way to
have you.
Not each week. I even took the each week off there intentionally. So you
way to go,
say it.
John.
But it's in my head. I can't change it. So this is how What's This Movie works. Either you or one of us comes up with a clip, a limerick, or something else like that to confuse and confound you all into writing us emails, which you're going to send us those emails at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. You're going to hit your contact tab in the app. Something is you're going to get to us. Just get it to us. We're going to say, hey, this person did awesome and guessed the right thing on the show the following week. Last week was Amanda's pick, and Amanda picked The X-Files. And those who got it right were Aaron,
Manuel Perez, and Nate Bruce. Just 2 got it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. So this week is Scott's chance to confuse you all. So here's his clue.
Yeah.
What?
What is this?
It's a going away present.
I'm not going away. I'm like a 40-minute train ride from Oyster Bay.
Reed, look at this place. You belong here. I've been here 2 minutes and I already know that.
I'm just going to school here. That's where I'm going to be working.
Looks like you're home, buddy.
He did it just to piss me off.
Yes, I did.
All right. Now, we are going to head into Infinity War. So before we head into this, I want you to let you know we are going to have a non-spoilery, real quick review. But then we're going to get into spoilers. But it's time to head into Infinity War. Okay, now we are talking Avengers Infinity War. And I should say, Scott Clark.
Hey, what's up, Aaron?
Yay, you are joining us now, direct from, I guess, Honorary Ho and from the Gaming Outsider podcast. There you go, you got your plug. Scott Clark, what's up, man?
Not much, man. Doing well. The tail end of my master's degree for this semester, and I am I'm looking forward to be over. So, but I'm excited to talk about the Avengers, because, whew, what a movie.
Can you tell me right now that you have not read the comics so we can get that out of the way and we don't have to hear it again?
Sure. I have not read the comics, so I know nothing about it. My comic book knowledge is based on whatever John tells me, whatever listeners from the community have told me. That's it. I don't think I think I've cracked the pages on maybe one comic in my entire life.
All right. Now we don't need to hear that again.
So before we go any further, could we go into a little bit more about who this Scott character is?
Scott left?
Am I back to being Scotch now that the real Scott is here?
I think he's Scotch now.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That'd be awesome.
That's technically, awesome. You were here first today, so he's Scotch now.
I like it. All right. Here's what Infinity War is about. Now, we're going to talk about it real quick without spoilers, and then we're jumping right into spoilers. So, as the Avengers and their allies have continued to protect the world from threats too large for any one hero to handle, a new danger has emerged from the cosmic shadows, Thanos. It's not really new. I mean, he's in a bunch of stingers, but whatever. A despot of intergalactic infamy, his goal is to collect all 6 Infinity Stones, artifacts of unimaginable power, and use them to inflict his twisted will on all of reality. Everything the Avengers have fought for has led to this moment. The fate of Earth and existence itself has never been more uncertain. And clarify what the stones are. They are soul, time, John?
Power.
But yeah, I mean, that sounds good.
Reality.
Reality.
This is space. Awesome. We don't know the names.
Space. The Tesseract is the space stone, right?
I mean, MacGuffin this, MacGuffin that. Yeah.
Time,
you know,
time, space, reality, power, soul, and what's the last one?
The Deus Ex Machina glove.
Hey, by the way, because I did some research after watching this movie, because my head's been spinning. The comic book has the stones placed in different spots on the gauntlet than it does in the movie. Did anybody notice that?
Cue it doesn't matter. Outrage.
Yeah, I don't think it matters.
Cue internet outrage here.
I don't know, man. The big one on the back of the hand seems like a big deal. This is a lot larger. I don't know.
Well, here,
are you
here's
just
what,
trolling us now. You're just trolling us now.
Here's I'm what really the not. Stones are. Stop! Here's what the stones are. The primary gem. The mind gem, soul gem, space, power, time, and reality. That's what
there
they
you
are.
Go. We forgot mind. That was visions.
Yeah.
There you go. Now we know. Okay, so overall reactions, before we get into any spoilers, keep it succinct, only a few sentences. What did you think of Infinity War, Scott?
Holy shit. I can do it in 2 words. It was amazing. I loved it.
Okay.
I have feelings, a whole lot of feelings. Most of them are fantastic and great. It's a lot.
Yeah, I get that. I'm still conflicted, actually, about how I feel about it, but it was good.
Yeah, it was an exhausting movie. There was so much going on. It was almost hard to keep up, and I can't decide if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I walked away from it just feeling very full of emotions, both good and bad. I think there were some pacing issues. I think it was a little long, but overall, my complaints are very minor. We'll get into more specifically here, but really enjoyed Infinity War quite a bit.
I will be honest, 2 hours and 20 minutes, whatever, I didn't even look at my watch one time, which never happens anymore. And it was fantastic. And the fact that the way that they managed to get all the characters together and make them work was amazing to me. So absolutely loved it. All right, that's everybody's reaction, spoiler-free. So if you want to know anything else that's spoiler-free, you're going to want to have to leave. I'm sorry, you're not going to get it from us, because everything's going to be spoilery from here on out. So from this moment on, right now, we are talking, spoilers allowed, about Avengers Infinity War.
There was an idea to bring together a group of remarkable people. To see if we could become something more. So when they needed us, we could fight the battles
that they never could.
You've been warned. Now, this is the biggest question to me personally. We finally assembled all of our favorite Marvel heroes in one movie, 10 years in the making. Did the Russo brothers actually pull off what they aspired to, John?
Absolutely. They pulled off every bit of gymnastics that was necessary to give us a movie that was coherent and powerful and strong. And it had all these awesome things to it. It really, I never even knew who the Russo brothers were before some of these movies started coming out. So bravos to them, and they did an awesome job. Yeah.
I'm stunned that this thing worked.
Like, yeah, it's amazing what they were able to put together. I mean, I cannot even imagine how else you would do it. Everything just fit together perfectly. You had combinations of heroes from different properties coming together that on paper don't make any sense, and they completely did. And it felt like, you know, like in a soap opera, you go from this area to this area to this area, and you just kind of go around in a circle. They did that, and even though it was exhausting, every time you came to a new portion with new characters, it just felt, all right, we get to see what's going on here. We get to see what's going on here, and you just never got bored.
No, and the fact that you had all the side characters felt utilized. I mean, really, so many side characters. I even had little moments. Falcon had a little moment. Everybody had a little moment, except Hawkeye, who was not hanging out there, apparently. He was off.
That was
intentional. What was the excuse for him not being there? He was basically told to stay home.
He took a plea bargain.
Cap was like, screw you guys, we're coming anyway, but Hawkeye stayed home?
Yeah, I think him and Ant-Man took a plea deal or something like that.
Yeah, they're under house arrest.
Yep.
That,
right.
And I think that was intentional because they would have lasted about 5 seconds in this fight. I think that they finally realized Hawkeye can't be a part of this group when they're fighting on this level.
Black Widow was there.
Which was distracting almost. She got a lot more powerful at some point.
No, I don't think she got much more powerful.
It's the hair of dye.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, that must be it.
Blondes always have more fun.
Back to Aaron's original question, I think it worked beautifully. Everybody felt like they needed to be there. It didn't feel like anybody was being forced in just to get them in.
Yeah, I agree.
Everybody had to be there to make the story work.
Aaron, I wanted to ask you, because I know one of your concerns going into this movie was that you didn't want it to be another Tony Stark and Friends movie. Do you feel like it was that at all?
Yeah, it was a little bit Tony Stark heavy, but I also feel like this is probably the end of his journey kind of thing. I mean, this one and the next one are the end of journey for him and Cap. But I felt kind of slighted in the Cap department because I really feel like Cap didn't get his proper screen time for what he's brought to this entire series.
This felt like to me what the comic books do with what you have Avengers A group, you have Avengers, you know, blue, or you have Avengers red. This is what that kind of felt like. You had Tony leading a group of Avengers off planet someplace, which in this case, the Guardians of the Galaxy's essentially join the Avengers, and then you have Cap leading another group on Earth, and they're working towards the same thing unbeknownst to each other. It felt like something the comics do, and it worked that way.
Yeah, but it was heavily on the Stark. Wouldn't you say? I mean, Black Panther really doesn't get much screen time, and you've got, which is kind of funny since he's now the biggest Marvel hero in the universe, you know, solo.
Not to mention, like, a good portion of the film takes place in Wakanda.
Yeah. And he's really not getting a whole lot of screen time. But really, it all falls back to Tony Stark. I mean, they cut back to Tony and his everything centered around him. And, of course, you know, his Uncle Tony, because you got Spider-Man with him, because we had to have that again. You
know, not anymore.
ouch.
I think it was interesting how much screen time the Guardians got, too, because that's almost like they tied in a separate film franchise. Like, they were bringing in the Guardians. They wanted to make them a part of this group, and they almost went too far with it. I get that they tie into Thanos because they were already in outer space where he was, but they had more screen time than I thought they would.
What I love most about what they did with the pairings is that – or not pairings, but bringing all the characters together is how they mixed all the different characters to really flatter each other. I mean, when you first have Thor show up – and you got Star-Lord just trying to outman him.
Which was awesome.
That was so great.
That was so funny.
I'm not talking in a deep voice. That's what are you talking about? I'm not doing that.
just everything.
This is my voice.
Right.
No, it's not.
Oh, that was so funny.
Actually, I get to finally bring this point back from the other show. Here's where the pin was. So this is why that whole Thor in space works. So they made it very clear that most races, when they fall out in the space, they turn into they get frozen. Like the Lord Voldemort, when he got ejected out of the thing, he got all ice all over him, and so did most other creatures. Well,
it took me a second to realize that you're talking about Squidward.
Yeah,
right.
That
right.
was great.
So, but when they bring Thor onto the ship, even Drax is like, this is no normal being. This is something different. That's a man. Like, even Drax is kind of floored by how impressive Thor is. So there's something about our Asgardians that make them much more resilient. And he's 15,000 years old or some junk like that. So there's something about him that makes him a lot more resilient beyond the fact that he's a space alien. There might be something to this whole he's the god of thunder, quote unquote.
Okay, you're talking
touching his muscles.
You're talking about what I said earlier about Marvel not being able to science. Is that what you're
pointing
to?
Yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I get that. Fine. He's physiologically a god, whatever he can.
He's the god of thunder.
How can he talk in space? You need air to transmit sound waves.
How does he talk in space?
Okay. All right.
That bugged me.
Enough. Oh, that's enough. When they went to the star with freaking Peter Dinklage running around being a giant dwarf.
By the way, that was the best appearance in the movie, was not only putting Peter Dinklage in it, but making him a giant. I thought that was awesome.
He was a giant dwarf.
Distracting to me.
That was so great.
Oh, completely distracting.
I loved it.
You got to remember, they kept on calling him a dwarf, is what I love. They were like, he's a dwarf. He's huge.
Yes, he's physically the biggest character in the movie. I love that they did that.
This is kind of funny how we're all distracted. So that's the part you're talking about when he talked there?
It's one of those things that took me out of the movie, and maybe it's just because I'm a nerd.
That took you out of this movie?
Yes. I'm like, why is he able to talk in space? Why can people hear him talking? It bugged me. I'm sorry.
So a giant Dinklage, fine. Thanos,
yeah, go with that.
Knocking the world out, fine. Everything else crazy that happened. Tony Stark walking around on a planet not having to worry about oxygen, fine.
Oh, no, that's another one that I had
an issue with. Apparently it was terraformed. I don't know. Thanos likes to prepare for humans. None of that bothers you, but talking in space is a
problem. I can't explain why that bothered me as much as it did, but it really bugged me.
He's the god of thunder. Maybe that's the answer, because it's a god. He's not a person.
Whatever.
Boom.
Can you show us on the doll where the god of thunder hurt you?
Oh, Jesus. Shut up, John. Nobody – well, I guess Aaron did ask you, but I didn't ask you, so shut up.
Well, I had issues with the whole Peter Dinklage thing, but not because – I thought his character was funny, and the lines, the whole, like, it'll kill you. Well, only if I die. Well, yeah. that's what that means. That was great. But the fact that it was Peter Dinklage, and he's so recognizable from Game of Thrones and everything else he's done, we all know he's an actual dwarf, and you make him this massive dwarf.
Whoa. We all know he's a little person.
Vertically challenged.
They called him a dwarf.
They called him a dwarf.
In a dwarf, like the Lord of the Rings sense of dwarf.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
Because
he's a little person. Whatever. We know what you meant, Scott.
Yeah.
But that, to me, was a distraction. Because that's what I was focusing on more than meeting this cool character. He's the one that made the hammer, right?
The axe.
Yes.
He did make the hammer, and then he made the axe. Yeah.
Then he made the axe. Stormbringer? Is that what it was called? Yeah. So this should have been this awesome moment where I was focusing. We finally get to see this character that created Mjolnir and created Stormbringer. And all I'm thinking about is that's actually Peter Dinklage, and he's not that large.
Peter Dinklage.
Oh, please don't do that. I still do that when I watch that show, and it's all Scott's fault.
You're welcome.
I hate you so much for that.
So Scots are hung up on somebody talking in space and a little person being made to be giant. That's what the Scots are hung up on.
Sure. It's a minor complaint, for sure.
I'm not saying it's a major complaint. Wow. Well done.
All right. Which heroes for you stood out most in the ensemble? Like any in particular pairings that you enjoyed, or just in particular characters that stood out for you, John?
I gotta say Cap. Cap is by far my favorite character. And when he showed up, I can't help but like say I probably shouted a little bit. I probably cheered. I maybe like pumped my fist real quick to be like, yes, there he is.
You weren't the only one. In my theater, there was a guy about five rows behind me that as soon as you saw Cap, like that like shadowy thing, and you close up and you see him, this guy, only one in the theater that actually cheered. And when I say he cheered, it was a guttural. It was so loud. Like the entire theater just started cracking up laughing because no one was expecting it. A lot of people would be annoyed by that. I actually was totally entertained that somebody was that excited to see a shadowy figure of Captain America.
My whole theater cheered. Like everybody cheered. Like, woo! The whole claps and everything.
We didn't get any cheers in my theater, but that was one of my favorite moments of the film where Cap steps out of the shadows. I was like,
with that beard.
Yeah, that was Chris Evans'
typical beard where he's just like, thank God I get to wear this for the movie. That's awesome. I don't even have to shave.
What did you guys think about his Wakandan shields, though, instead of his traditional?
Oh, I wasn't a fan. Stripes?
Why?
I missed the Stars and Stripes shield. I wanted to see him get that back because it's so important to him. I was really hoping at some point Tony would get it back to him, and it didn't happen. So
Tony's in space.
There's a whole nother movie coming.
I know. Yeah. And I'm sure it'll show up at some point.
I love, by the way, they originally announced this movie as going to be part one and part two, and then they changed it to just Infinity War. Oh, yeah, because we're going to tell that story in the first one. You sons of bitches. Now we get what they were doing.
Yeah.
We get it. The one that stood out for me most was actually Spider-Man, who I wasn't a fan. I didn't love in Homecoming, but I really kind of dug the whole that they brought the spider suit, you know, the mecha suit, whatever. They brought that into
Iron
this.
Iron Spider.
Yeah, Iron Spider. Thank you. The name was escaping me. And how he hopped on and he rode in because he wanted to be the hero and everything else. I found him endearing. And even though I knew all the characters that were dying will eventually come back because most of them have sequels planned.
Yeah.
When he died, that was a really, really hard scene to watch. That was really emotional. It was.
Well, he was the only one that reacted emotionally to it. And teenagers don't think about their own demise. And when he kept saying, I don't want to go, it's like this teenager's life is ending and he knows it.
Yeah.
That's a hard thing for teenagers to accept because they don't think about that. Teenagers are invincible.
Hard scene, yeah.
It was.
So
you mean that was better than Steve?
That did not work for me at all.
No.
I'm like, and I love Bucky and Steve. Yeah. I'm just like, what? That's the best you could have came up with? Steve?
The hero that stood out for me in this was Rocket. I think he became a lot more heroic in this movie than he has been up to this point.
Right.
You know, he's the only guardian.
Captain Rocket?
Yeah, Captain Rocket, which was awesome.
He's
Captain Rabbit.
What I thought was really interesting is that most of the team that has left is the original Avengers, right?
Yes.
Most of the original team, except for Rocket.
Yeah.
Rocket's still there.
They kept him around.
Which is interesting.
They spent so much time bringing new characters into this universe over the last couple of years. We got Ant-Man and Black Panther, and you're expecting them to – they're going to be the ones who carry on Phase 2. And then we get to Infinity War, and they wipe out all the new characters, and we're basically back to the original Avengers. I thought that was interesting.
It kind of makes sense to me in a storytelling kind of mode, because if the next movie is going to end up being a passing of the torch, essentially, from the originals to the new set of Avengers, then the originals bringing back the new ones and get passing the torch, so to speak, I guess, it makes a lot of sense storytelling-wise.
Yeah, I can see where that's going to go. Like, they're going to have to give up their lives to bring them back or something. But I get it. I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, do you want to get into that now? Because I have thoughts, but I didn't realize you were going...
No, we're going to get there here in a second.
How's this dude still alive?
He is not a dude. You're a dude. This is a man. A handsome, muscular man.
It's like his muscles are made of Cotati metal fibers.
Stop massaging his muscles. Wake him up.
All right. Did anybody seem outclassed here, maybe outmatched to keep up with all of this, Scott?
Yes, and it was one that surprised me. Up until now, Vision has been touted as like the invincible, most powerful Avenger.
Thank you.
And he spent the whole movie getting his ass kicked. Yeah, I couldn't figure that out. He was worthless in this.
He got in love. He fell in love. That's what happened.
So what?
He's single forever, man.
You know, it took Captain America to come in and save Vision. That's supposed to work the other way around. He's supposed to be almost invincible, and he literally got his ass kicked for the entire movie. I thought that was surprising.
He didn't do anything.
Nothing.
Except get his ass kicked and, be in surgery. That didn't work.
Right.
We don't know that it didn't work. I mean, sure, he's pretty slick. I think she might have gotten his consciousness, and they could just put him in a new bot.
Okay. I don't think I'd buy that, but all right.
Okay. Well, I have issues then. Can we talk about that? Do you want to get into that now? Because this is one of the gripes I have with the movie about Vision.
You keep bringing up
issues.
How
do you feel about Vision, Scott?
Yeah, please tell us.
My thing is, like, a lot of this movie, all the bad things that happened in this movie could have been avoided if Scarlet Witch would have just removed the damn Mind Stone from him to begin with. Mm-hmm. But like you said, this love connection thing, which to me doesn't make any sense. Vision is a machine, right? He's not like a real person. He's a consciousness.
Man.
And okay, yeah, we're gonna argue about the humanity of a fictional
character. I think he's become humane. Yeah, I mean, yeah. he's AI. He is a Westworld host. He has achieved consciousness.
Okay,
he's like Maeve, but better.
Okay,
whoa. Maeve is better. I would rather have Maeve than Vision.
Even still, if she had just plucked the thing off of his head from the beginning, like she had to anyway, before Thanos got the time stone, it would have been the exact same thing, except he didn't have the time stone, although he could have taken the time stone back even further, so to speak. But then you would have avoided all of the conflict on Wakanda and all the people that probably died during that battle just because she didn't want to kill him, which I get it. You want to kill him, but where does the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few? Where does that come into play with Avengers? Why can't we sacrifice one person to save the lives of thousands of other people?
Because Cap said no.
Yeah.
I mean, for that matter, if Loki would have just left the stone on Ragnarok when it blew up, then the movie would have never happened anyway. Oh, so man. I think...
Well, really, ultimately, it's Star-Lord's fault.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's where I was going to go.
If you got to blame anybody, blame Star-Lord, because, I do want to say for the people saying that was completely out of character, no, it was not. It was completely
out of character. No, it was not out of character. That was completely Star-Lord.
Yeah, he gets emotional, and he gets angry, and he reacts impulsively.
Look what he did with his dad in Guardians 2.
Right.
Half the universe just died because of Star-Lord. He should be the most hated character. Yeah, because he couldn't wait 5 seconds to kill Thanos instead of punching him in the face.
Yep.
I was pissed when I saw that.
I was pretty mad at Star-Lord. I'm like, way more than character. Scarlet Witch. At least I got where Scarlet Witch was coming from. I killed the guy I just spent, you know, having a pretty crazy weekend, I would guess, because of all the stuff she can do. I'm sure that's probably going to be more emotional.
Well, that just happened.
Yeah.
So, because of that one scene, Star-Lord has now become my most hated character in this universe. I'm kind of glad that they killed him. Because I was really angry at that scene.
Absolutely. And the one thing that I guess probably didn't work for me as much as it should have was the Black Order, which I didn't even know was called the Black Order until after I left. Yeah, see, Scott?
I'm looking at him like, what is
the Black Order? The minions. The Thanos' minions.
Oh, yeah.
The really tall guy and then the shorter Squidward. Female character.
Voldemort, the Green Goblin.
And Squidward.
That was blue. Yep. Those guys.
I'm sorry. The one female character was coming real close to Scorpion King, like, for me.
Really?
I didn't get that.
I get that either.
Oh, man. There were a couple smirks or looks that she did that just felt very, I don't know. I'm not convinced that it was very CG for me.
Yeah. Like, if people want to give DC a hard time for CG-looking characters, her and Thanos still... kind of walk that line.
Thanos works for me entirely, man. Except you can't move fast because you know it's motion capture.
Yeah, Thanos worked better for me than I thought he would. My biggest problem with the minions was that they were, again, kicking Vision and Scarlet Witch's ass until Captain America, Falcon, and Black Widow showed up and then manhandled them like they were teenagers.
That's true. Black Widow did a lot more than Vision did.
That's what I was bringing up earlier, is that she suddenly has become a lot more powerful in this movie than she was up until this
Vision
point.
Vision was just so tired from his weekend.
I'm not used to this. You wore me out.
I mean, yeah, there's no sax before a fight, you know?
There's no sax?
Sax?
It's an old Naked Gun joke.
No. Mm.
Oh. Oh, I thought you were talking about Thanos' chin.
Wow.
I forgot all about that, but yeah.
That was a funny one. That was good.
All right. Anything you thought wasn't done well here or missed the mark?
The one thing that misses the mark for me is the Infinity Gauntlet, especially once it's now completely assembled. Internally, the conflict is like, you see it happen and I fall apart and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe all that happened. But then mentally I go, yeah, but it's the Infinity Gauntlet. It can all be undone. So it takes the wind out of the sails for everything that happens there. It's like, okay, yeah, it just happened, but you know they're going to turn it around because the gauntlet's already showed you it can reverse everything it's done wrong.
Right. And that's kind of like at the end of the movie, everyone just kind of sat there in stunned silence. And all I'm thinking is, you guys, they're not gone. I mean, there's no way they just killed off all those characters. There's no way that Black Panther is not getting a sequel. There's no way that they're going to do Guardians 3 without Gamora. I mean, there's no way. They literally just got done showing us that all this you can go back and make changes. So
let me ask you, I mean, this is a great opportunity to talk about it. So everybody died, or half the population died. A lot of our heroes died. Can we discuss who we think is actually going to stay dead? Is anybody going to stay dead?
I have some ideas on that.
Okay. What do you think? Yeah.
I think anybody who got poofed out of existence by the Infinity Gauntlet is going to come back. I think anybody who was killed in other ways, like Heimdall and Loki at the very beginning and Gamora getting thrown off the cliff, I don't think they're going to go back that far. I think they're done.
You think Gamora's dead?
Yes, I do.
Really?
I don't. Yeah. I don't think Gamora's dead.
I think the only people they're going to bring back, they're going to turn back time to the point where he poofs out half the universe, and that's as far back as they're going to go.
If I could turn back time.
Don't you think?
No, it goes time.
Don't you think that because Nebula reconnected with her sister, and it's a soul for a soul, don't you think she might at some point be willing to sacrifice herself to bring Gamora back?
That would bring that character back full circle from where she was, and mm-hmm. I think that's a good possibility.
Somebody would have to. Poetic, Aaron
and Scott. Where you go? That's very. Yeah. I'm so proud of you two.
That's about the only way that could work, because to get the stone into the Infinity Gauntlet and to have this not become an irreversible time paradox, somebody has to die there, which is why I'm thinking Gamora is going to stay dead. But chucking Nebula off, I guess, would even the balance, I suppose.
Here's the difference, though, with Gamora. If you look at Loki, we saw Loki dead. We saw him, you know, he was impaled, right? Thanos impaled him?
No, he broke his neck.
Broke his neck. Okay, we saw a breaking of a neck. We saw Vision's face gone, although, like you guys said, his consciousness could come back. We saw Heimdall dead on the floor. All we saw of Gamora was just, you know, her on her back with her leg looking like it was broken. I mean, it's the rules of comic book movies, guys, right? Nobody really dies unless you, I mean, movies in general, or even television shows, nobody dies unless you see them dead.
But if she had, I was just going to say, if she hadn't died, he wouldn't have gotten the stone. That was the deal.
Right. And we do see her dead.
Yeah, I mean, she was dead. She's dead.
Totally dead.
Yeah.
She's currently, at this moment, dead. There's no, you know, Gamora's not going to pop up anywhere right now. Unless somebody throws a stone. I guess they could throw the soul stone back in there and get her back that way. That's
maybe.
Possible.
That could work, I guess. I don't know.
Well, you got to remember what Red Skull is still there, too. Could he have anything to do with that?
That was cool, by the way. I love seeing him come back. That was awesome.
You know that wasn't it's not Hugo Weaving? Did you know that?
Yeah, it's like an impressionist or something.
Whoever was doing that impression did a damn good job then. I thought that was him.
So did I.
I did, too.
Wow.
Then I looked it up. Turns out he doesn't want to do these movies anymore.
Yeah, because they killed him in the first one.
No,
it was like more like that mask was supposed to be like super uncomfortable. Like it was just a miserable experience for him. He swore he'd never do it again.
Yeah, well,
he lived up to it.
He followed through on that, I guess. I thought it was him. Yeah. Whoever did his voice did a really damn good job.
Yeah, it would have been cool if Terrence Howard was down there, like when they when they show Gamora.
That poor guy is so bitter.
He's just,
you know, that's a different timeline. A different timeline. Terrence Howard would be sitting down there. It's like that's you see all the different like corpses of from different timelines of how it's
playing. And he just says, "It's me. I'm here. Deal with it."
He's playing chess with Edward Norton down there. We're still here, guys.
Oh man! All right, now surprises. The Russos begged people to stay off social media. So, what were your biggest actual surprises? And could the internet have actually ruined the movie for you, Scott Clark?
I mean, the biggest surprise obviously was the end. I mean, I don't believe they're all dead. It was still very much a surprise that they were going to pull that off. That they pulled that off. That they ended the movie on such an Empire Strikes Back kind of way, on such a down note. You know, I mean, it literally ends with Thanos sitting there, staring off into the sunset, resting while he's like he said he wanted to do. And that was just a very bold way to end this movie. So I enjoyed that one. But we already mentioned it too. Red Skull was a fun surprise for me. That was very cool.
You know, I want to say that people keep comparing it to Empire Strikes Back, middle of a trilogy and all that stuff. I would completely disagree with that. I think this movie ended and the hero's lost. You know, it's just the first time we've ever actually had where the hero's lost. Now, we know that they're going to come back and, you know, fight the way back. But that's like another story. That's a whole different story. And I honestly think what's going to happen is they're going to go forward in time before they go back. That's my personal opinion. I really feel like I've seen some alludings to that, but I don't want to speak to it because I sure don't want to spoil it for anyone. But
so it's going to be reassembled?
Yeah. That'd be funny. If the Avengers reassembled, that would be funny. But yeah, I really
see what you mean, like, though, because at the end of Empire Strikes Back, there was still hope. They still like, okay, we're going to go get Han from Jabba the Hutt. We'll rendezvous on Tatooine.
It was totally a cliffhanger. This wasn't a cliffhanger. This ended.
Yeah.
He won. He won. We lost.
To me, this wasn't Empire Strikes Back. The movie that I keep going back to that ended in a similar fashion was the second Hobbit movie, Desolation of Smaug, where the dragon's flying off to wipe out Lake Town, and they're all standing there going, wow, we just really blew it. That was kind of the impression that I got at the end of this. But it's the same thing. Our heroes, there was no rah-rah moment at the end of this like there always is at the end of a Marvel movie. They got their asses kicked and they lost.
Yep.
And even the stinger was like more of us getting our asses handed to us.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was.
Yeah, calling in the Calvary, Captain Marvel.
We got our Captain Marvel tie-in, which I thought was pretty cool. But seeing Hill on and a 90s Fury disappear.
Yeah. What's that?
on a 90s era beeper.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which is going to push back to, I'm sure, the upcoming movie. You know that one, the Captain Marvel movie is coming out in March before the Infinity War, next Good. Infinity War movie?
Yeah, but it takes place way out of time with this.
It just feels like 90s. Really close. I really feel like Black Panther at least had some time, you know, it had some distance.
Not that much time. Black Panther was, what, 3 or 4 months ago?
No, it was more than that.
February. Yeah, it's February.
I guess it is 3 or 4 months ago.
Yeah, where March is like a month and a half before, well, a month, a little over a month, I guess. But
It's March. April right now.
I guess it's only the month after February, so...
It's April right now. It's April. It's 2 months ago.
All right. Shut up. All right. So any other surprises that you think could have really ruined the movie? I mean, other than the dusting of everybody, I don't really know. Gamora dying, I guess, would be a huge one. Loki, kind of thought Loki would die, so that wasn't a big shock.
I think they did a really, really good job of hiding what kind of role Hulk was going to play in this.
Yes. I thought that was cool, too.
I that was like the one thing that really shocked me especially when they were doing the whole like Hulk doesn't want to come out and play thing where Hulk was choosing to not come out. I was so stunned that they were doing that. I thought it was awesome. I'm the one who like won't watch every single trailer, and this is one of those ones where I did a very good job of I've watched the first trailer and that was it. But I was still shocked by what kind of role the Hulk played on this, because he's even shows up he shows up in the trailer. He shows up in print ads. He shows up running down the field alongside the Hulkbuster.
Is he in the trailer? I didn't see that. Is he in that trailer?
Yeah. Yeah. He's in the trailer. He's in the print media. He's there. So they really like juked us on it, and I appreciate it for it.
That was surprising to me how little role Bruce had a big role, but the Hulk had almost no role because Thanos kicked his ass and now the Hulk's scared of him. That was the impression that I got.
Did you think it was a little weird that Banner had the Spider-Man 2 problem where he just couldn't get it up?
No, I like that because it's like the Hulk didn't want to come out. Like, I'm not fighting that guy again. He already kicked my ass once. You deal with it.
Is that the way you took it?
That was the way I interpreted it.
Hulk's being an asshole. Yeah.
I thought that was actually really good, and it was a big surprise. If they had blown that, as a spoiler, that would have sucked. But I think most of the spoilers tie back to who's going to die. Those were the big ones.
John, do you think Vision's dead forever?
No, he's not going to be dead forever. I don't know how they're going to bring him back, but I doubt that this is the end of Paul Bettany's career, because let's face it, without this, Paul Bettany doesn't have much of anything else going on.
He's married to Jennifer Connelly, so he's got that.
Well, I mean, yeah, he's got that going for him, but I don't think he's gone. I really like everybody that's gone. With the exception of Loki, I'm like, well, I can't wait to see them again. They'll be coming back because the Infinity Gauntlet really just takes it all away from me. All that trepidation and fear of somebody being gone forever, I don't have it because the Infinity Gauntlet's in existence right now.
Tell me his name again.
Thanos. He's a plague, Tony. He invades planets. He takes what he wants. He wipes out half the population. He sent Loki. The attack on New York. That's him.
This is it. What's our timeline?
No telling. He has the power in space stones. That already makes him the strongest creature in the whole universe. If he gets his hands on all six stones, Tony...
He could destroy life on a scale hitherto undreamt of.
Did you seriously just say hitherto undreamt of?
Are you seriously leaning on the cauldron of the cosmos?
Is that what it is? I'm going to allow that. If Thanos needs all six, why don't we just stick this one down the garbage disposal?
No can do.
We swore an oath to protect the Time Stone with our lives.
And I swore off dairy, but then Ben and Jerry's named a flavor after me, so...
Stark raving hazelnuts.
Not Ben.
A bit chalky.
You know, that brings me to another question. We're left with most of the new Avengers are wiped out, and we're kind of relying on that one last mission with the old guard. Do you guys feel like the ending missed an opportunity here? Because we know several of these heroes will be back, like they nerfed a lot of the emotional resonance of their deaths. Do you guys think that even though it happened, it really didn't impact you the way that it should have?
Well, I mean, you mentioned earlier the Peter Parker one affected, I think, most of us. But like you said, everyone else just kind of had very little to say when it happened. There wasn't a whole lot. I think the one that's most intriguing was Doctor Strange's, you know, mm-hmm. when he said that this was the only way, and you almost, because he never really liked Tony when he first met him. It was very, and he was almost like pleading or trying to convince him. But outside of those two, everybody else was just, you know, this is happening. We don't really understand it. I feel like that's how people actually would react. If that happened, we wouldn't have time to have like an emotional response. It would just be like, what's going on? It doesn't make any sense. So for that aspect, I actually kind of liked it. I'm not going to say I really liked the Peter Parker and I liked Doctor Strange, but do you see what I'm saying? Like that's how it would actually happen. If we just started disappearing into dust, that's pretty much the exact reaction we all would do in real life.
Yeah, I agree.
I'd be more like, why is Blade here? Nobody? Come on. Huh?
Wow, that took me a minute. Sorry. Scott made a really good point that the Doctor Strange character saw how many outcomes, like 14 million outcomes where the Avengers lost and one where they win. And whatever he saw, obviously Tony was there at the end of it. So for them to have that one outcome, Tony has to be there, which is why he did what he did. At least that's how I took it.
Well, we don't know that. We just know... I mean, I would argue that we don't know that. We just know that in that one scenario that he saw, he needed to give the Time Stone and he needed the world to end before they can actually come back. The only way they can win is if they allow that to happen. That's what I got. Doesn't necessarily mean Tony. I think everybody assumes that means Tony has to be alive.
I interpreted it as he saw Tony in the winning scenario at the end. So he had to save Tony's life. And the only way he could do that was by giving Thanos the stone. That was how I took that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. That one scenario that works. We'll see where that goes.
It all begins and ends with that glove. As long as I know that glove's there, I don't really care what happens. I'll let them tell me the story, but I don't feel like it's over until that glove is gone.
Right.
But we had a couple moments in the movie where characters had to make a choice about killing somebody they loved. It happened three times. I mean,
nobody could do it.
And
nobody could kill anybody they loved.
They all did do it. She finally did make the decision to try and pull the stone out of Vision's head.
Yeah, she kind of waited her ass a little bit.
Quill did try to shoot Gamora, and
that's true.
the shot turned into bubbles. Yeah. You know, they got faced with those choices over and over again, and the characters made the right choice, but it didn't work out the way they wanted it to. I thought that was an interesting play on our emotions that Marvel went with for the movie.
Well, those two cases, you're dealing with hesitation ruined it both times. The only time where hesitation didn't matter was when Thanos threw Gamora off the cliff.
Man,
that was the third one. That was the other one I couldn't think of. Was when he killed Gamora. Yeah,
I didn't really doubt that one though. I knew that was going to happen. I'm like, wow, he's really going to kill Gamora right now. That's going to happen here.
But okay. I think it bothered
I was more
him.
Surprised by how torn up he was.
Yeah.
That's where I was like, that's where I finally went, okay, here. Because to me, the star of this movie isn't the Avengers. It's actually Thanos. This is this is his story.
Yep.
I'm with you 100%.
Me too.
This is, and that's probably why I think he's one of the stronger villains, actually the strongest villain we've had yet from the MCU, because we already know everything we need to know about all the different Avengers, and we don't have to go through, we'll get to know this person, and here's this person doing song and dance. The only person who's doing their song and dance is Thanos. And one of the things that I think is interesting is that the Black Order is kind of a representation of every single villain we've ever had in the MCU real quick, all these little mini bosses to remind us that this is what a mini boss is like. And then we get to the boss boss who's going to raffle stomp everybody.
Well, that brings up an interesting question. Clark, let's go to you. Thanos. Why do you think Thanos works so well?
Well, I think what John just said is, like, we're used to Marvel villains being very just oppressive and just one track mind. And I just want world domination and no real reason. And I'm not going to have any emotion. Thanos had emotion. I'm not going to go as far as to say that I agreed with him or could kind of see his side, but there was humanity is not the right word, but you know what I'm getting at. Like, he had emotions. He had feelings. He loved Gamora. He truly did. But he loved his goal more, and you could see that he was tore up about it. I appreciated that.
I thought his plan had, I mean, it's a dastardly plan, and it's kind of horrible, but I also kind of understood the logic of it. I think
overpopulation and all that.
Yeah. I alluded to it earlier in the show when you were afraid I was going to get into spoilers. I get where he's coming from. He thinks he's doing the right thing. He's not doing this for any benefit to himself. He thinks that he is doing the universe a favor by doing this. And if you look at it from a purely mathematical and resource allocation standpoint, he's right. You know, this will solve a lot of the problems on a lot of planets in this universe is overpopulation. So let's call everything back. Nature.
But it also creates more problems.
Well, I know, but nature does that on its own. You know, mm-hmm. When a population gets too large, nature has a way of knocking that back.
It finds a way, you might
say. Yeah. Jeff Goldblum. But it does make sense. I could relate to where he was coming from. He wasn't just being evil or out to dominate the universe. In his mind, he was saving it.
Can I ask a legitimate question? If in the next movie, any one of you guys, in the next movie, the next Infinity War, whatever they call it, Avengers movie, if they fast forward a couple of years or 5 years or something, and the world is actually doing well, would you want them still to roll back and change that course of history? Like, maybe.
Man, that's an interesting
thought. That's a hard question.
It's a very interesting point. I can't decide what I would want in that instance because all those characters are gone. I want those characters back. Do we just kind of, like, you know, clean our hands of it and say, well, if that happened, let's just move on and see what happens. And that becomes like the passing of the torch. That would be bold. I would actually really appreciate that if they did that. I just don't think that's what they're going to do. You know, you still got the Avengers, you still got Rocket, and then just kind of move forward and defeat Thanos now to keep him from doing it again. That's an interesting way to do it. I would actually respect the hell out of them if they actually pulled that off, but I just don't see it happening.
If they don't roll back the clock and bring all the heroes back and undo everything that Thanos just did, then the MCU is admitting that Thanos was right. If they let it stand,
they would never let it stand.
Yeah. They would never let it stand, but it would be a great ending.
Yeah. The thing that I find the most interesting is that everyone's like, well, he has all these good reasons, and they're not necessarily selfish reasons. I think the ending proves that he had very selfish reasons for doing what he did. When he ends, when the movie ends, and he's sitting on this beautiful paradise of a planet looking off into nothing, and he's just kind of looking into that to me tells me that he had his own selfish reasons for doing it, which is he wanted to live in a beautiful place, and he was getting what he wanted out of it. It wasn't like he wasn't altruistic by any means. He just wanted something a specific way, and that's what he did to get it.
I think he was looking out at, hey, peace and quiet. I made it happen. Peace and quiet. I made peace and quiet happen. This is my dream. I got my cabin in the middle of nowhere, and I can look out in the field, and it's everybody's, you know, it's a lot of guys' dream. So,
I mean, my wife's out of town. I have a clean house for the first time in months.
So you get it, right?
I get it.
John, are you excited by that Captain Marvel stinger at the end? I mean, is that exciting? Absolutely.
That's one of the things I'm most excited about coming from the MCU is to see Captain Marvel on the screen. She's not exactly one of my favorite characters, but I'm very interested to see the growth of that character. I want to see where they take her. I want to see what happens with her, and I want to see. There's just so much potential that I can't wait to see happen in front of us, and that's what I'm excited about.
All right, favorite overall moments from Infinity War.
This one was easy for me when Bucky picks up Rocket and just starts spinning in a circle shooting. I thought, not only because Bucky just accepted a talking raccoon with a machine gun with no question whatsoever, he just picked him up and used him as a weapon. I thought that was hysterical. I was laughing so hard during that scene. It was great.
Can I get that arm?
That was amazing.
Oh, I'm getting that arm.
I'm getting that arm. That was great.
I hope he gets it. I really do hope he gets it.
This wasn't a favorite moment, but along those lines, how did you guys feel about Rocket replacing Thor's eye?
It was kind of a cop out, really.
Yeah, I did too. I didn't like that.
Yeah, I liked the patch. I thought the patch was really cool.
The patch looked good.
I did too.
Yeah, I thought the patches were cool. I don't understand why they had to replace it, but okay.
Some of my favorite moments, this movie, shockingly, Gamora really owned. I was actually, because she's always been, even though I love Guardians of the Galaxy, I never really found her to be the more exciting character. I mean, Drax is always really fun. Rocket's fun. You know, whatever Groot does is kind of interesting. And of course, Star-Lord, but she's always kind of like the weakest link, so to speak. And here, I thought she really dominated the movie. I mean, I really bought her pain. I thought they really struggled to sell the whole, hey, he really does love her. Look at her. Look at him stealing her from her entire family. Now that seemed a little too much. But in terms of sheer performance, I thought Gamora was great. Zoe Saldana.
I've taught myself to be completely undetectable when still.
That's one of my favorites, too. Like they're having this moment, and then you just hear him crunching on like space pretzels or whatever he's got back there. Oh, yes. It was funny.
Not regular pretzels. Space
pretzels.
No, we can
see you. And then Mandus comes in and is like, hey, Drax! And he just walked away.
Throws off.
Oh, that was great. That's actually my favorite aspect of this, too. The awesome moments we've had in this as far as epicness was great. But I appreciated the humor a lot because Avengers always had humor. Guardians always had humor. And they're somewhat similar, but they're also very different, I think. And the fact that they were able to bring both of those types of sense of humors into one movie and make it work was great. I think Thor with the Guardians was great. Thor with Rocket and Groot.
The rabbit was
hilarious. But even when he was there with the whole group, it just worked. Never in a million years did I think Thor with the Guardians would work, and they totally made it happen. But there's so many funny scenes. The Drax moment. I don't know how I feel about the whole Groot being a teenager who just wants to sit and play video games the whole time.
I didn't like that at all.
I thought that was funny. I have a question about Groot, though, and I have to ask John. Thor's new axe, does that follow the same rules as the hammer? It's made out of the same thing, right? Do you have to be worthy to pick it up? I don't know enough about the comic book lore to know that.
Yeah, essentially the axe is the same exact thing as actually a little bit more powerful than the hammer is. But yeah, it's the same kind of rules where you have to be worthy to pick it up.
So we've got a third.
So Groot picked it up.
Right. We've got a third character in the universe who is now worthy to wield the hammer. And
that's a good point. I didn't realize that. Did Groot pick it up?
He picked it up to put the handle on it. And then he kind of reached out to Thor with it.
The axe is part of Groot. Well, it was part of Groot.
Yeah, the handle is part of Groot. And I thought as soon as I saw that, you know, I was thinking about the movie yesterday after I watched it, and it hit me. I'm like, wait a minute. Groot had to pick that up to put a handle on it. Does that mean he's worthy to wield the hammer?
Also, his apparently. Arm grew back exceptionally fast.
Yes, it did.
He's a tree. Leave him alone.
took forever in the first one.
He didn't grow back that fast before. Yeah, it took a long time. Remember when he got both of his arms cut off in the opening scene of the original Guardians, and then they slowly started coming back because when they had him in prison – his arms were like only about halfway down.
No, they were back by the time he was in prison. So
I'm not talking about when they were in the holding cell when they did the bunch of a-hole scene.
Yes,
they were only like halfway down. Remember?
Yeah, but then a couple scenes later, he grows to take the battery pack out of the tower within seconds. He just grew, extended himself, and grew, and then shrunk back down again.
Okay, so why isn't he full size now? Why is he still an adolescent?
It takes time.
Let me go ask him, Scott. One second.
I'm just saying. I speak
Groot. I am Groot.
Well, yeah,
I am Groot.
It's an elective on Asgard.
He says, "Screw you, Scott."
Yeah, it's an elective on Asgard. That
cracked
funny.
Me up.
Yeah, Thor speaks Groot.
My favorite moment, my overall favorite moment in the whole movie is when they stab Tony Stark is definitely number two. But one is where Captain America catches Thanos' glove, the Infinity Gauntlet. And Thanos just looks at him like, holy shit, you can stop this?
Yeah.
Like, he just looks at him like, bitch, you might actually be worthy of this thing. Back up. So I really wonder if that's alluding to anything that's going to happen or if it's just the same kind of joke they use with him and the hammer.
If you want to guess on that, he's going to be the one who uses it to turn everything back at the end of the next movie.
Well, it could be because in the comic it was Adam Warlock, and Adam Warlock is not part of the universe yet. Right. I mean, he was teased in the Guardians movie, but they're not going to bring that character, I don't think, into this without developing him in some way.
We're going to get another moral choice from Cap where he has the gauntlet and has the option of keeping the universe that Thanos created or turning time back to get everybody back. I think that's just as a guess on my part where that's going to go.
I think that's a safe answer. I like Aaron's idea better. I wish they would do it.
John, what do you think in terms of the gauntlet? Is it one of those things where you just have to be powerful to wield it, or how does that work? What are the rules on that?
The rules behind it, as far as the comics were concerned, is that anybody can wield it. It's just once that person has it, they're invincible. They're stupid powerful is when once the person has it. Anybody can wield it.
Gotcha.
I said, as long as their hand is big enough, that's a big gauntlet.
Well, it doesn't follow. It's like the Cap shield. It doesn't follow the rule of physics very well, so it shrinks to whoever the wielder is.
Like the ring in Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
Well, that's just what? That's a MacGuffin.
By the way, speaking of MacGuffins, did you see that they tied up? Everybody was arguing for a long time about how he was going to get the Infinity Gauntlet because it was in the vault on Asgard.
Mm-hmm.
He just had to make another one.
Well, but that Infinity Gauntlet in the war room on Asgard was fake.
Yeah, he took the real one. That was at the end of Ultron.
No, he had the Peter Dinklage made him one. They showed the mold. He said that he made it for him.
No, you're right. But the thing is, like Hela walking through the war room on Asgard.
Going, this is fake. You're
when
right.
She looks at it, because remember, we see it for the first time in the first Thor movie. It's sitting there in the war room, and everyone's like, "Oh my God, the Infinity Gauntlet's there." Then as the movies go on, there's this Infinity Stone's there, this Infinity Stone's here. But if all these Infinity Stones are there, then how is the Infinity Gauntlet there? And she walks by and just knocks it over, calling it a fake.
You're right. I forgot about that. She does go through, and after she points at that specifically, she goes, half the stuff in here is fake. You're right. I forgot about
that. Mm-hmm.
All right. So now we move on. As you sit here, having time to reflect on it, where do you feel this film sits in the pantheon of not just Marvel, but superhero movies in general? And I know we could all be on a hype wagon right now, but Clark, what do you think?
Boy, that's a tough question to answer, because like, I know we had our little poll in the group about what our favorite were, and I still feel like my favorite is still going to be Civil War, just because the idea of the Avengers fighting themselves is much more intriguing, and that scene at the end might cap that one for this one.
You can't your own joke.
Well, I didn't really, because I didn't mean to. I just,
sure you didn't.
It was out of my mouth and I went, look at that.
Yeah, that's a stark, stark comparison to what I expected. Stark,
I don't know. I feel like I need to see this a second time. Oh man, you just did it too.
Yeah, you did.
I need to see it a second time to really kind of make a judgment call, because there's so much to process in this movie. You're asking me for favorite moments, and I'm sitting here thinking, there's so many of them. I almost can't remember them all in my head as I'm going through here, because there were so many things going on. I need a second viewing to really say it, but it is going to be up there for sure, just because it's so much fun to see all of these characters on the screen at the same time, even if they're in different scenes. And yeah, it's going to be in the top three for sure for me. I'm saying of all superhero movies, not just Marvel.
Other Scott?
For a superhero movie, there, to me, there has to be that ooh-rah stand up and cheer moment, you know, where your hero, whatever he's gone through that beat him down to this point, comes back at the end and just reminds you that he's a superhero and kicks ass and cleans everything up. This movie didn't have that. It ended literally with our guys just laying around going, wow, we just got our asses kicked. And that was how the movie ended. To me, that knocks it down a little bit in the pantheon of superhero movies. I want my superheroes to be heroes. And in this movie, they didn't come out very heroic, and they didn't come out very well at the end. It's a great movie. I'm not saying it's not a good movie. It's in my top five Marvel movies. It just didn't have that superhero vibe of the superhero saves the day. Here, our superheroes did not save the day.
That's so, what I liked about it, though.
It's a great concept, and that's one of the reasons why I like it, but it's also one of the reasons why it's not a reason why I like superhero movies. I like to have that ooh-rah cheer moment, and this one didn't have that.
Do you feel like it's part one of two, or do you feel like it's a complete movie?
I think it's definitely part one of two.
That's how you see it?
Yeah, to end it here basically means that everything we've done for the last 20 years was for nothing. I mean, the the first Infinity Stone.
That, 10 years. 10 years.
10 years. The first Infinity Stone that Thanos gets is the one that was on Xandar. And they totally glossed over that by saying, oh, yeah, he wiped out the Nova Corps and destroyed Xandar and got that stone first. Which, if you think about it, nothing that happened in the Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one, matters. Everything they did was for nothing because Thanos just came in and wiped out that planet and got the stone anyway. That makes for compelling storytelling, but it makes for a lousy superhero cheer moment.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
All right, John, what about you? Where's the stand overall in superhero dumb?
It's the star of the Christmas tree.
Wow. Wow.
If I couldn't see another comic book hero movie after today, I'm fine with that ending. I'm fine with the idea that these people who fought against all odds still failed. And they had an idea that they were going to fail, but they still fought and kept on going and did everything they possibly could to fight against that. I think that's still heroic, and I think that's still powerful. And it's great because it has 10 years of movies backing it up. It's great because it didn't have to spend so much time convincing us why we should like everybody. All it did is spend time convincing us why we should be scared of Thanos, and that's all it had to do.
Right.
It's really the star of the Christmas tree. I love a lot of comic book movies, and I think a lot of them are great. It's really hard to beat this, but at the same time, if you take this one away, that tree is still great. Nothing falls apart without this star on it, but it really is worth it, I think. There's another analogy I was trying to form in my head, and I completely lost it, about it being like some sort of a keystone and an arch, but that doesn't work.
This is where I would say is this is not my favorite superhero movie, but it's the one I respect the most because I really feel like, A, that they could bring them all in the same together in the same way, make it work. You know, I know some critics were complaining because there's no character development and stuff. I'm like, you had 10 years of character development. This was,
yeah, right?
This
right.
was the ultimate sequel is what it was. So shut the hell up. The development's
what a
been
stupid
done.
Thing to yeah,
I've heard it in several
the internet man
you wouldn't even know what was going on if you just jumped into it. Well, no,
duh,
that is freaking exactly what the movie's supposed to be. It's supposed to be go see the other ones and then this is a sequel. It's a sequel. That's what it is, and it's a culmination of everything else. I respect the hell out of it. They made it work, they made it fun, they made it click, and I didn't feel like anybody really got shortchanged. So to me, this is a fantastic movie. Probably not it's definitely not my favorite Marvel movie because Avengers is still there. Dark Knight's still number two, but I would probably say it's number three. And I love that the heroes lost because it never happens. It never, ever happens. And I think even if it could be, undone and everything else, yeah, it's still.
Or if it does happen, it happens halfway through the movie and then they come back and win it. This one ended with them losing.
That's ballsy. That's very ballsy. Yep.
You just brought up a way for me to articulate what I was trying to say earlier, which was this moved these characters beyond just a superhero movie. Mm-hmm. This almost gets into some serious drama type stuff because there is no happy ending. This is taking a superhero movie, which normally has that cheer, stand-up moment, happy ending every time, and this one yanked it out from under you and didn't give it to you. Which almost moves
closer to an epic.
Yeah, this moves it almost beyond a superhero movie, which is one of the reasons why I love it so much. I just don't think it works. It's not my favorite superhero movie because it doesn't have that superhero ending. This went beyond that, and I think that's a good thing.
Well, that's one of the things that Marvel does and does very well is that they don't bring us. I never really feel like, sure, I'm walking into a movie that has Captain America or Iron Man or something else like that. And sure, inherently, there's a comic book idea with you. But what they actually bring you is a story that fits that character. It's more Captain America's. It's a story about espionage and all this other stuff. Ant-Man, there's some sort of like tech stuff going on. Iron Man, same thing. Tech. Spider-Man, it's a teen angst movie. There's always some major theme to it that just happens to have a superhero in it. And I think that's where the brilliance in Marvel comes in.
All right, we're going to do round robin. Nothing more than just your final score. If $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give this one, Scott?
$10.
Right. Scott Clark?
$9.
John Davenport?
$9.
I give it $9.50. It's pretty close. All right, and then finally, last question. What do you want to see? Johnny, what do you want to see from the MCU going forward and predictions for Avengers 4, even though I think we already talked about that. But what do you want to see from the MCU?
That was such a hard thing for me to come up with as far as something I want to see. I think I'm okay with them in the driver's seat and then them giving me something to see so far. I don't want to sit there and say, well, I want to see this or that. Let them tell me their stories. It feels too much like me putting my own wants and needs behind what they're doing.
All right.
I'm going to totally agree with what John just said. Surprising me again.
I am an actual good person.
I know. I just like giving you a hard time. I don't want to guide this. I don't want to have any expectations for this. Captain Marvel means nothing to me. It's just a name. I know nothing about the character, but I'm intrigued to see what they do. Mm-hmm. Guardians was the same way. A lot of characters have been thrown at me from this universe I didn't have the first clue about, and I've enjoyed some of them the most. So just keep doing what you're doing, Marvel. Throw stuff at me and see what sticks. I think that's a good plan.
Clark?
I feel kind of the same way. I went into this movie initially with kind of not – I wasn't super excited to see it. Aaron, you know that I was texting you about it. And then the hype drew me in, and I kept hearing everyone just rave about this, and I went into it with such high expectations, and I feel like if I hadn't gone in, I would have been more blown away. If I didn't go in expecting some kind of shocking thing to happen, I would have been more blown away. But what I want from this in the future with Avengers 4 is, number one, I want to see Captain America and Iron Man have a conversation. Mm-hmm. And because that needs to be resolved. They haven't spoken since that letter, and there was no interaction between these two characters in Infinity War at all. And I'm really curious to see what they're going to do with that, because they're going to have to team up to fix whatever has happened. And I'm that's the thing I'm most looking forward to in that movie.
Yeah. I don't know what I want to see going forward. You know, I think there's probably a bunch of characters I'd like to see in the MCU, but they're doing a lot better bringing ones I didn't want into the world to begin with.
Yeah.
Guardians, Ant-Man, yeah. I didn't care about any of those guys, and now I really enjoy them. So I'll wait and see what they do. And I love Brie Larson, so I can't imagine Captain Marvel's going to be bad. The one thing, I would like more Black Panther in the next movie, if they can make him materialize. Because I feel like he really didn't get a whole lot to do. For it to take place in Wakanda, I really felt like Wakanda didn't get a whole lot of moments.
No, they didn't.
And seriously, T'Challa might be the coolest Avengers. Seriously, he just oozes cool. The way he talks, the way he handles himself. Mm-hmm. I'm with you. I want to see more of him for sure.
Definitely.
I was really happy to see a Manape back in this one. I don't know why I like him so much.
Who?
Manape.
Oh, yeah. Manape, the other guy.
M'Paku. Okay. Yeah. Scott, I agree with you about a conversation between Tony and Captain America, because those are usually awesome when they happen. There are some really great moments that have come out of some of the past movies where the two of them are just talking, like watching Steve rip that piece of wood in half. It seems like they have some of the best scripted conversations there between those two characters.
Because they're polar opposites.
Yeah, and they really work that up well in the lab on the helicarrier during the first Avengers. Mm-hmm. When those two are talking, it's riveting, and I really want to see more of that. And Tony was going to call Cap for help at the beginning of this movie.
Weren't you all wanting that?
Yes, I wanted to hear that. Mm-hmm. I wanted to hear that conversation, because Tony was going to, for the first time ever, eat his pride and call Captain America and go, I need your help. And we didn't get to see that. I really wanted to see that.
Speaking of, this wasn't mentioned, and we really should mention it. Did you think it was a cheap shot that Tony got stabbed and lived?
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of like a cheap
shot. I was ready for it. I think it's also important for what we've already talked about in terms of Doctor Strange knows what's going to – has seen that 1 in 14 million way of how they can win. And in my mind, that way to win is Tony sacrificing himself at a later time, and he knew it wasn't his time. So for that aspect of it, I liked it. But as soon as he got stabbed and Thanos has got his neck in his hand, I'm like, all right, he's done.
Yep.
This is actually happening. And part of me was a little disappointed that they didn't pull through on that. But if they go the way that I think they're going, then I'm okay with it. If not, I'm going to kind of call him out on that in a year.
I reacted to that exactly the same way. When Tony got stabbed, I was like, well, he said he wants out of the series. They're going to kill him right here. My jaw was on the floor that they were actually going to do it. And then they backed off of it. And I was a little disappointed. I was like, that would have been a cool moment.
Great moment.
Yeah.
Great moment. Because here's the one thing. I don't want every hero that's going to die in a heroic moment. Give me a surprise. Give me everybody expects that. Let them have a heroic moment earlier in the movie. Yep. And then let them die crazy.
Like Tony all of a sudden having a heart attack, all the years of drinking and drugs, just like.
Well,
Yep. And he's down. No,
let him have a moment like they did at the end of this one, but for real. In like at the end of Star Wars Episode 3, when with that executive order or whatever, and Jedi just started getting wiped out. Let that happen. Let some major characters just go out like that, but for real.
Well, they did that at the beginning of this one. They offed two of the biggest characters from the Thor universe without a second thought. Heimdall and Loki died very not heroically.
That franchise is done, by the way.
Yeah, it sucks to be an Asgardian in this universe now.
There's Thor's no more the Thor standalone movies, I don't think.
But I was surprised by how casually they killed those two very big characters. And after they first stabbed Heimdall and then they broke Loki's neck, I was thinking to myself, man, this is going to be a bloodbath. If they've off two major characters in the first 5 minutes of the movie, this is just going to be red shirts through the whole movie.
but they offed major characters from the Thor universe.
Hey, back off that.
I don't know if you heard, but Thor is in the top five all-time MCU films. So apparently a lot of people are digging this new boob Thor direction.
I like Thor's character.
Actually, with that happening to the Asgardians, I can actually see a fourth Thor movie happening where Thor's like kind of going through the universe and it happens across a colony of Asgardians someplace. I can actually see that.
Maybe
happening.
We can bring them back too. They just reverse everything. Asgard comes back. Everything is fine.
My first thought when you mentioned a little far. was just him sitting in a bar getting drunk because he's so depressed that everything happened to his people. That was for some reason.
I would watch that as a standalone movie. Just Thor gets hammered. Like
just 2 hours of going Thor drinking in a bar.
12 steps of Thor. I would watch a lot of that. All right. Well, I think we covered every possible base for this movie. Thanks, everybody, for being here. I want to say if you have any questions or thoughts on this episode, you can email them to feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can always join our Facebook group where the post is always in there and people love to comment on it. Or we're on Twitter @BuyPopcorn. Remember to grab the hoe and the go with our Apple or Android app, Spotify, or subscribe and review us on Apple Podcast, Stitcher. TheHollywoodOutsider.com is our website or your podcast app of choice. You can find John's artwork on Instagram and everywhere else at rjohn.draws. You can find Scott Clark on The Gaming Outsider and me on my other podcast, Smirk, Remake This Movie Right, Beyond Westworld, and The Blacklist Exposed. That's going to do it for this episode. Thanks, everybody, for being here.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much for having us. It's good to be back.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Scott, go back into retirement. We'll see you again sometime.
All right, we had enough of you. Get out of here.
Yeah.
I'm keeping your name spot warm scene. On the show.
Remember, guys, the next time you head to a theater to see Infinity War again, but not through MoviePass, buy popcorn.
Fine. I'll do it myself.